Blog Talk Radio.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
Republican Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene said Thursday that she has introduced the articles of impeachment against President Joe Biden and other members of his administration. On Wednesday, Greene announced during a House hearing Wednesday her intention to impeach Matthew Graves, U.S. Attorney for Washington, saying he has refused to prosecute real criminals while targeting January 6, 2021 Capitol protesters. On Thursday morning, she targeted Biden and others over the executive branch's failure to secure the country's southern border. The Georgia Republican said she intends to impeach the president and those tasked with protecting the country's sovereignty. At a news conference, Greene accused Biden of working to destroy the country, and this is nothing more than a lot of us have been saying this whole time. Greene said, quote, "It is with the highest amount of solemnity that I announce my intention to introduce articles of impeachment today on the head of this America last executive branch that has been working since January 20th, 21 to systematically destroy this country." The President of the United States, Joseph Robinette Biden. Joe Biden has deliberately compromised our national security by refusing to enforce immigration laws and secure our border, unquote. Now, as a question to all of you, do you think Biden should be impeached? Now, most people will say no. Impeachment is kind of like a last resort for something that is going wrong in this country and where you go after the people who are causing what is going wrong. Now, every Democrat's going to tell you, no, he shouldn't be impeached. There's no reason for it. But you can always turn that right back around and say there was no reason to impeach President Trump, and you did it twice and would have done it a third time if you hadn't run out of time. And everything that was pushed on those impeachments of Trump have been proven to be wrong. And the people who pushed these things, like Adam Schiff and all these others that were telling things that have been proven to be wrong, should be held accountable for this. But they're not going to be. And that is where this nation is having its problems right now, because the people who are doing the wrong things are not being held accountable to it. And this is where we need to start thinking about what is going on. Citing the latest influx of illegal immigrants, which is wrong, and I keep telling you people this, these illegals who are coming across our border after the lapse of Title 42 are not immigrants, they're invaders. Plain and simple, they are invading the country, and that is an act of war. His administration has willingly refused to maintain operational control as required by law, which is, Democrats, all of you Democrats who disagree with me, read the law books. It's there. Greene also said she was filing articles of impeachment against FBI Director Christopher Wray, which they should be, Attorney General Merrick Garland, which it should be, and Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, which it should be. Each of them, she said, is unfit to serve and is also corrupt. All of the articles of impeachment were shared in a news release on Greene's website. One of them, articles of impeachment accuses Garland of willfully neglecting his oath to uphold the law, which he has done. Attorney General Garland has failed to uphold his oath and has instead overseen a denigration of the principles of our democratic republic, which is it, by politicizing the Department of Justice and utilizing the Federal Bureau of Investigation as a federal police force to punish or intimidate anyone who questions or opposes the current regime. And that's what the thing against Garland says. Green said Mayorkas has failed on every facet of his job in the statement on her website. Mayorkas, this stupid thing, I've got to turn this thing off. Okay, I just turned off the printer because it keeps beeping at me. Mayorkas canceled border wall construction contracts, which would have secured our nation's border, violated the law by directing DHS to mass parole illegal aliens into the U.S. when the federal law specifically prohibits this, encouraged asylum fraud, abused the credible fear statement, and exercised mass catch and release policies, she said. Not only has Secretary Mayorkas enabled child exploitation, sex and drug trafficking, and fentanyl overdoses, but he has also done everything in his power to put Americans last. And this is where we're having our problems here, folks. The Democrat Party and a lot of the Republicans are putting what is going on in this country, they're putting Americans last, when their job should be to put Americans first. Their job is to make sure that we're protected from inside and outside forces. But they're not doing it. They're not wanting to do it. They're not doing anything to stop what is going on. But Ray, Green charged, has used Soviet-style tactics to target American citizens and enemies of the Biden administration. He must be impeached, she concluded. Now, it's like I said, there are a lot of Democrats who are going to say, no, this is wrong. You shouldn't do this. But they shouldn't have done it when it came to Trump. He was doing nothing but trying to straighten out the things in Washington, D.C. that have been wrong for so many years now that anyone who goes against them on trying to straighten things out are labeled as terrorists, are labeled as anti-American, when in fact they are not. Welcome to the show on this, the 19th of May in the year of our Lord 2022. Today is the day my younger brother turns 69. So happy birthday to him, and we will be right back.
But what we saw in that Senate today was a cowardly group of Republicans who apparently have no option to.
Show me where it says that protest is supposed to be polite and peaceful.
Do something about your dad's immigration practices, you feckless.
They go low, he kicks.
How do you resist the temptation to run up and wring her neck?
The biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized right on to the right.
I thought he should have punched him in the face. So even if he lost, he insulted your wife.
Yes.
He came down the escalator and called Mexicans rapists and murderers. He said, well, what do you think I should have done? I said, I think you should have punched him in the face and then gotten out of the race. You would have been a hero.
I'd like to punch him in the face. If I said, if we're in high school, I'd take him behind the gym and beat the hell out of him.
Punch some people in the face!
When was the last time an actor assassinated a president?
It's amazing how people try to frame everything racially, and how they create divisions among our society.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. We'll be right back.
Welcome to hour number one of NWCR Radio with your host, Robert Garding. This is Duke Brooks of Radio Free Delmarva from 92.7 WGMD, Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, and I'm proud to introduce my friend Robert as we fight to protect the America we know and love. Through the silver microphone of freedom with the voice of reason in this unreasonable world, you're listening to NWCR Radio, broadcast through the CNM network in Albuquerque, New Mexico, from our Freedom Studio. And now, here's Robert.
Back. The call-in number is 646-478-5284. On Wednesday, we had the first episode of our new show, and from the preliminary numbers that I've seen so far, it was a smashing success. There was a lot of people there. There was a lot of people calling in. I missed it because I kind of lost track of time, and I was doing something with my wife, and I suddenly realized, oh, my gosh, the show is on. I've got to go, and I just missed it. The chat room was still there, and I missed the show. I was really kicking myself about that one, but I've listened to it. It was a great show. It's a new format that none of us have ever used before, which is actually kind of a good thing. He worked as a forum where he was asking questions and people were calling in and answering, which it worked out well. I was really proud to have him on our network. It was a great show. I think Joseph is in the chat room right now. Joseph Gibson, he's in the chat room. I think he was there. Sarge, who comes in here a lot, who comes into Black by Color Only, he's always there. I think Pionki was there. There was a whole bunch of people were there, and they were calling in. It was really a great show, and I was really proud to be able to listen to it. I wished I could have been there, but Bringing It Boy was there. But we had a great show on Wednesday, so And that's going to be the normal night for that. He hasn't let me know anything about whether he wants to change or not, but that's the night he had asked for, and it turned out really good. We had it was a success from everything I have seen so far. So we've got a great new show in that one, and we hope that continues. Senator Marshall said that Biden and Schumer want the border crisis. Now, what I was talking about in our first thing about the border, the thing that we have a problem with here, folks, is that everybody talks about the people coming in as illegal immigrants or illegal migrants. They are not. They're illegal, granted, but they're not migrants, they're not immigrants, they're not anything. They are invaders because they will not go and do the correct things to get into this country the way the laws state it to be. And the laws have to be followed here, folks. We've got to stop letting the people in charge decide for us what laws are going to be followed and what laws are not. But President Joe Biden and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat in New York, are not working towards solutions at the U.S.-Mexico border because they want this problem. And thousands of people who are flowing into the country, Senator Roger Marshall said Friday on Newsmax, they want thousands of people crossing the border every day, and they are. They want them to come into your communities and vote for Democrats in the future. which is what they're looking for, because they can't win their these elections honestly. So they've been cheating every way that they possibly can, and they're trying to push the idea that they know these invaders who are coming into our country, if they're allowed in, then they'll vote for Democrats because it's the Democrats who are allowing them in. And they're doing everything they can to make sure that this is what is needed. And it's not needed for America. It's not needed for our sovereignty. As a matter of fact, it goes against that. But Kansas Republican Senator Marshall said, remember how the consensus was taken? The consensus is not taken based upon how many American citizens there are, but how many people are there. We try to fight that, but we lost. And if there are more people present, the Democrats can potentially get an extra congressional district in a purple state, and most likely in a state, a blue state as well, which would probably be here in New Mexico and in Arizona and California and maybe even Texas. He added that 10,000 people are crossing the border every day. And this is, we have people in New York City, like the mayor in New York City is talking about a couple of busloads of people who are just completely overrunning his city, and he says it's got to stop. Chicago's mayor is saying the same thing. A couple of buses every day is equivalent to really just tearing down their system. Well, what about what's happening in New Mexico, Arizona, Texas, and California? How many people are coming in over that border every day? And I guarantee you it's a hell of a lot more than a few busloads every day. Now they're starting to talk about how the people coming in since Title 42 has ended has been a lot less, and the numbers seem to be going down. But what they're doing is a lot of these people who are coming in are just being ushered in. They're being the old thing about, catch and release is being used. They'll catch them and then release them into the country, not back out of the country. They're releasing them into America to go wherever they're put. And then the government says there's too many. We cannot find out how many there are or where they're at because there's too many of them. Well, the IRS can find out exactly where you are, and there's many more of us. But if you miss your taxes, the IRS can find you. Why can't the government find these illegals who have come in illegally, invaded our country, and send them out? They can, but they don't want to. And we have to realize here, folks, that this country is a sovereign country. We have the right to protect our borders. One of the states down here is actually taking the materials that have been bought and paid for and are down here that were here specifically for building that border wall. One of the states down here, and I've never been able to figure out which one, I think it's Texas, but they're actually using these materials down there to build the wall where it's not. Well, the materials are there. They were put there for the border wall. And now Democrats and several people are already talking about how, oh my God, we can't use those for the border wall. That's not right. I've got a phone call at 323 Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, to answer your question, when are we going to fight for America? I have very little faith in the American people. What about you?
I'm getting there really quickly.
You know, on my show on Wednesday, I try to make the position that anybody who called in, I was going to grill them. I was going to find out for sure what it was about solutions that they thought were actually good, as opposed to people saying what we have to do, what we need to do, we have to get together, we have to formulate a plan. And what I wanted to do was to make sure that if you're going to say you're going to get together and make a plan, what is it? Because if you just have aspirations and no methodologies to achieve your plan, all it is just a nice little piece of fairy dust. What do you think, Bob?
I actually think you're right there, because what they do is they say, we need a plan. And then I think last week or something like that, the Republicans came up with a plan for the border, and the Democrats just poo-pooed it and said, no, that's not a plan. And then they proceeded to announce to the United States through the media that the Republicans don't have a plan. And I think that's the big thing, is they're pushing the idea that there's no plan, even though they're saying nobody else does either.
Well, their plan is to allow everybody in. And mm-hmm. the Republicans as well. Forget about the rhetoric that the Republicans do in front of the cameras. If the Republicans are any, there's only two groups, two parties in America, actually.
Yeah.
And let's say the senators, there's 100 senators because it's 50 states. So let's say you have 60 Democrats, 40 Republicans, and the Democrats control, supposedly, the Senate. Well, if the Republicans were as good as they say they were, then all 40 of
them not.
Would, of course they're not, they suck. They're just the left side of the vulture, and the right side are the Democrats. So the point, though, is that if the Democrats have a 20-person game, right? They have 20 more members of Democrats and Republicans, that they would automatically control everything that's in the Senate. Well, if the Republicans were all good people, all intelligent people, all people that were thinking about the benefit and the welfare of the citizens, then all 40 of them would stand up against any kind of nefarious legislation that the Democrats would pose, and vice versa. So if you have 60-40 and 40 are automatically against, now if you have 10 defectors, right,
mm-hmm.
from the Democrats, then you got a 50-50, and the bill doesn't go to the president. Now let's say you can't override what the Democrats want. They have control. So it goes to the president. And if the president is a Republican, he vetoes the bill. Now what happens? It goes back to the Senate, and you have to have a two-thirds majority.
Mm-hmm.
Well, two-thirds of 100 is 66. They can't override the veto if all the Republicans who are trying to gaslight America into believing that they're all good, if all 40 of them say no.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right?
You're
so,
right. We've also got another person on the line. It's 336. You there?
Yes.
Hello? Oh, okay.
Yes, hello. How you doing? Well, look, it only takes one congressman or two or even three to stand up U.S. congressmen. They have exclusive power, Congress, as individuals. They have nullification powers. They have a sergeant of arms that is there at that Capitol building. They can arrest Joe Biden. Contempt of Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what article it is. They can invoke they can direct the sergeant of arms to do many, many things. All this. Well, we have a Justice Department. No, Justice Department, FBI, those. Unconstitutional, never were, just totally, they have nothing to do with the Constitution whatsoever, okay?
Yeah.
Homeland Security, EPA, all these government branches of government that we call government, the Federal Reserve, those are not part of the government technically and lawfully. Lawfully, it's the Senate, the Congress, the President, okay, and the Supreme Court. You don't, and the people, we the people, okay? But you've always heard of the three branches of government. So therefore, look, a U.S. congressman and or congresswoman, one, two, three, there has to be some righteous people there. We don't need a majority of a party to do something. You know, we only need a committee appointed by a couple of congressmen or whatnot to do and to enforce the Constitution.
Yeah, that's absolutely the truth.
No, but no, Joe, we absolutely need more. Because if we only have a minority, right, then they can filibuster what the minority wants.
Now, that's only to pass legislation. When there, but
yeah.
there's an article in the Constitution where a congressman, if they're called contempt of Constitution. Matter of fact, what's that guy on that talk show guy, that Levine? He talked about it one night. That they don't like talking about that. It gives a Congress certain powers. That, like, for instance, like when you know that Biden's breaking the law here, he's definitely breaking the law, and he's not doing what his office, oath of office requires him to do, right? Which is protect the borders, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all these committees have all the evidence in the world to have him arrested. I mean, but it's like Eric Holder when they did the Fast and Furious program. Remember that story? They talked about it then, where they could put him in handcuffs and put him in the jail downstairs. Now, he still would have to be indicted. He still would have to be going through due process of the law and whatnot. But what it does is it gives immediate powers for Congress to, like, for security reasons of the country, when there's a threat or whatnot. I'm probably not explaining 100% correct, but it would make sense if you believe in the Constitution, because you have to protect our country. So if the president is not doing his job and they put the country in danger, what do? You don't wait until you get a majority in Congress to vote on something. No, Congress has certain powers where they can act right away, you know, and that's the thing.
I don't pretend to know a lot about the Constitution, I'll tell you that. And by the way, before I forget, hey, Joe, if Sarge comes on your show, tell him that I apologize for the clusterfuck that happened on Wednesday to you, to him, to Sally, and to everybody else when they came on. Oh, by the way, Bob, this is Joe from Montana. Okay.
Okay.
So do you remember the name? Okay. So you know what show I'm talking about then.
Absolutely. I listened to it even though I wasn't there when you guys were live.
Oh, so you heard the clusterfuck. That's not going to happen again, okay? Because anybody gets on that show is going to be kicked off unless somebody really wants to defend themselves. And then even then, after a few minutes, the arguing is going to stop. So I try to get a hold of Sarge. I couldn't get a hold of him. So, Joe, if you talk to him, tell him I apologize to him, you,
okay.
Sally, okay?
Sure, I appreciate it. I mean, you know, and I don't think it was all totally your fault, but yeah, you're right. The first part of the show was absolutely excellent, where we were having discussions.
It was.
We moved a little bit quickly, but still, that's your show. You do what you want. But when that it brought a good conversation, it was a good conversation what we were having. But the argument and yelling back and forth was just totally insane. I mean, it was just not, a lot of callers were trying to get in. They couldn't get in. They were like,
I can ask questions,
you know?
Really? I was watching the switchboard. Nobody was, like I said in my description page, nobody had to wait longer than 4 minutes.
I remember there was a couple guys that were actually connected that wanted to speak, and they were like, I'd like to ask a question, and they just couldn't get in. I mean, they couldn't get in.
No, they weren't
in.
On
some
the switchboard at all. Nope.
Well, I don't
they
know. They said
the
they were.
At all. No, but so. Warren was saying he wanted to speak, and I let him speak because I wanted to give Sarge a chance to defend himself. But when the going back and forth got too loud, got too much, and it was again, it was all about the racial divide. Then I put a stop to it. But from now on, it won't last longer than a few minutes because we have topics to get to. So I'm sorry for what happened. Sorry to you, Bob, for interrupting your show to talk about my show.
Oh, that's okay. one of the things that Vincent Brown does on his show on Saturday, he has a thing called the fruit alarm.
yeah.
If, And if he gets somebody who comes in and starts tries to make trouble for somebody, then he gets does the fruit bat alarm and he kicks them off the air.
Sounds good. Yeah.
And it's usually in the chat room, so it, because that's something I never remove. My stuff, when I get through with my show, I usually remove it so there's not so darn many things in there. And I've got most everything on my computer anyway, so I can put it back in again. But with him, he's got the fruit bat alarm, and I think there's a couple of other things in there that are pretty hot, pretty cool. I think I can go down to the bottom down here. There's a fruit bat alarm and shooting fruit bats is the other one.
Oh, yeah? Huh.
Mm. And
okay.
If they're in the chat room, you can go ahead and use them. That's, you know, or if they're on the audio clips, then you can go ahead and use them. That's, you know, they're in there. So,
yeah, I don't see anything called a fruit bat, but I'll take another look.
Yeah, they're down at the bottom one. The bottom one is called shooting fruit bats, and then there's another one just called fruit bats, and then there's a fruit bat alert.
All right, good. I'll take a look.
So one of the powers, you know, like I said, back to that, is that, as for instance, even the U.S. Senate powers and procedures under the Constitution, the House of Representatives has the power to impeach a government official. You know, mm-hmm. Why hasn't the impeachment process begun with Joe Biden over the border issue alone?
MTG
is trying.
MTG is going after that one. She's not only going after Biden, but she's going after Mayorkas, and she's going after Garland.
Yeah.
Good. That's their job. They should. That is their power. They have that power to do that. And it doesn't, mm-hmm. And it shouldn't have to be bogged down or with gridlock either. There's powers within the Congress, and we have, don't forget, you have the people behind them too. It's not just the one congressman stands up and says, I want to do this. No, you have the people. The people, we're the ones that are really in charge. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, we're supposed to be. I mean, come on.
I'm gonna say, yeah. See, you're right about that. We're supposed to be. But once we elect politicians, that's our means as a civilized society of making sure that we don't inflict vigilante justice.
Yeah.
So that's why we have them in there, and we trust them. Now, the real problem is that the American people are stupid, and I don't blame the American people for being stupid. We are brainwashed by design. There was a book mm-hmm. written about it by a person who was involved in it. I forgot how to pronounce her name, but it was The Dumbing Down of America. That's the name of the book.
Yeah, I think I've seen that.
Yeah, they learned it from World War II, the propaganda machine of Goebbels, you know, and that, you know, a lot of the scientists over there, yeah, the televisions, the radio music, the jingles, a lot of it, you know, it's all been studied out. So you're absolutely correct by design, yeah.
Sure. And in academia is what the book is about. The kind of, like, for, what was the name of the type of curriculum they were talking about and inflicting upon the students a few years ago? What do they call it? What do they call it?
The New World Order?
New World Order.
No. The curriculum that they inflicted upon the students.
Oh, I don't know. But I'll tell you one thing, though, is that also in the foods we eat, the chemicals that make our bodies, the endorphins, you know, to suppress our energy, our endorphins, you know? It's madness. It's madness, man, when you think about it. It's just insanity.
It is madness. That's why I think that we are being controlled. Now, I know this is going to sound like a fruit bat, but I think we are being controlled by aliens, literally by people either from outer space or from the interdimensional universes, and I'll tell you why. The worst psychotic. Let's say we have psychos who are arsonists, right? The psychotic arsonist is not going to wake up in the morning and say, you know what? I think I'm going to burn another building today with me in it. That's not what he's going to do. Now, what are these psychos doing? They're putting glitter up in the atmosphere to block the sun. They're putting up the chemtrails. They're poisoning the water supply. And as Joe was talking about, they're putting, they're poisoning the food supply. Why would they do that if they're going to suffer as well?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
now if they were humans, they wouldn't do it. Now, I understand the human instinct to control and to destroy and to absorb nations like the Borg. But you don't do it in order to destroy yourself in the process. Only aliens would want to do that, to destroy the planet in order to terraform it for them. So I'm making an assumption here. I am inducing from certain facts what I think is the truth. I don't have proof. And I like evidence, but I don't have proof.
Yeah, I think what you're saying has foundation to it, but it may not be aliens. It could be demonic.
That's good, too.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was going to mention that one.
But because this is the reason why I say this, is because history, during Eisenhower's presidency after World War II, they say, I don't know, when the Murder Roswell incident and everything, they say, like you said, aliens, they visited and they actually told the government officials of each country, the heads, you know, at that time, that this is the way it is, but they were visited and they were told the way it's going to be, and there's no such thing as God, and that's why they put "In God We Trust" on the bill, because they didn't want the people to find out about it. It's all crazy. I heard these crazy stories, what you're talking about, but there is foundation to it, you know?
I was reading some articles that actually support what you're saying, Joe, and I read it about 2 weeks ago. Some of the articles were talking about secret documents that were revealed that showed that these aliens supposedly did make contact, at least with Eisenhower, maybe Truman, and maybe some other people. Now, these are supposedly Air Force documents. I don't know if they're true or not, but, you know, I can't doubt it. I can't say there's evidence against it.
Yeah, I mean, they hide so much from us. I mean, it's just like a lot of things that are buried that we're not allowed to know about. Like, for instance, let's go back to the Bible, Noah's Ark. It's buried in Russia, but the Russia won't allow anyone to dig it up, because it would disprove their religion then, you know? So I'm just saying, these are stories that are out there. It's crazy, you know? I mean, you know, like the Ark of the Covenant. They say that's in Ethiopia. You know, I mean, there's lots of things that we're kept from information, you know, that's kept from us. And the truth is out there. You just got to search for it. But sometimes when you search for it, though, you stumble across things that you're not supposed to know, and then you end up dead, you know?
That's true,
you know,
too.
The problem with the government, though, is that when they see people starting to search for things that they don't want you to see, then they'll start throwing things out there. So there's so many things going that people don't.
Remember Jesse Ventura? Remember Jesse Ventura? He had that show.
Oh, sure.
Remember he had that show? They canceled on him because he had death threats and everything. They canceled on him. I forgot what the reason why they canceled it, but he was uncovering stuff that they didn't want him talking about, you know?
That was it. His ratings, I believe, were high. And I think he was supposed to continue for another season, but then the network executive said,
Crazy, man.
Kind of like what happened to Tucker Carlson, too, then. Because he was talking about things they didn't want him to talk about.
You notice how he's not talking anywhere else, really? You know? I mean, he's just quiet. You know, now maybe 3 years from now, he'll pop up on a scene, on a little show, a cable show somewhere, and everybody will forget about it, you know?
Well, he's supposed to have a show starting on Twitter.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've already talked about that one, and then Newsmax keeps talking about having the people call in and text whether they think that Newsmax should put him on Newsmax. But I've heard
the
show on Twitter. I'm not sure how
work. Yeah, I don't know how that would work either. But
in your opinion, Joe, I always ask everybody this, and for the host too of the show, in your opinion, just real quick, how long you think we really got left on this planet or country, in your opinion?
In my opinion, I sat on the show maybe before you got there. 2 years. From 23, 25. That's it. Some people think we're going to end it today. I don't see the signs. I'm looking for certain signs. I don't see those signs yet. When I see those signs, it's hasta la vista, baby, because if I see the signs, it's coming a month later. It's not going to come down the pike a year later.
Well, there's all kinds of signs happening, but there's some that just haven't yet.
The acceleration of crashing the economy, the debt thing they've been talking about. That's a definite bubble burster right there. Because it shuts down 28 million people's jobs in this country and checks.
Sure. That they can do anytime and could have done it decades ago. It is very easy for the mainstream media to come out with news that, oh, my God, look at the bank runs. The people are taking the money out. Do you know what kind of a panic that would make in a few hours' time? Everybody would rush to the banks. It only takes a few hours to crash the economy that way.
That's absolutely right. You know, and what is the money really? What is money really? That's what we all have to sit down and think. What is money really? What are we bartering with? Who are we to barter? You know, because that's how they control us, man. They control us for so long, even before this country. The money, money. Who controls the money? You know, that's what it's all about. Well, who invented? You know.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about the Federal Reserve one time, but I got those three topics I want to stick to until they're exhausted. Yeah. Then I'll talk about the Federal Reserve and maybe open up some people's eyes. Or maybe, Bob, you can talk. Maybe you've done it already. Hey, Joe, you can talk about it. You know about it. Federal Reserve.
I've done shows on it. I'm an expert on the Federal Reserve. I've studied it for many, many years, the Federal Reserve, the fractional reserve banking schemes and how they do it and whatnot. Oh, yeah. Where the creation of money, where it originated from, the central bank. Oh, yeah. I've done some shows on that in the past. But, yeah, we could do that.
There you go. Sure. And then the digital currency. Oh, forget it. And once that comes in, then we're dead. Because they'll take away the cash. We will be under the thumb, as you're talking about, under the thumb of Washington, D.C. Because if we do not do what they want, they'll just cut off our bank accounts, our savings accounts.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So that one thing we started to talk about with the articles of impeachment against Joe Biden, that came out, I think, Wednesday and Thursday.
That's good.
And one of the questions they asked in the article, I found it in Western Journal, one of the questions they asked is, do you think that Biden should be impeached? And
okay, that's a
I
damn
think
good
he
question.
Should be, but I don't think it'll happen.
You know, why I say it's a damn good question, because I'm not going to give the automatic, he should be, because I, as a libertarian, think about unintended consequences. If he's impeached, does that make Kamala Harris president?
Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm.
You think that's a good...
I think she's involved in this, too.
But look at the longer But hang on, look at the longer picture, though. She'd be more easier to beat, though, in the election, don't you think?
Oh, she would be.
I think any Democrat would be easy to beat because Bobby Kennedy is in the storming his hat in the ring, and he's the most prominent, most popular, and if he's not the most popular now because of DeSantis, he will be in a few months. He will beat DeSantis. He will beat Kamala. He would beat Biden if Biden is still around to talk. You know, if he's not snuggling up to the hair of some 15-year-old.
I don't know too much about him, but I did watch an interview on him. I like what he has to say, but he has trouble speaking, though, doesn't he? What's wrong with his throat?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. It's very bad, but he's been around for – and when he had a show, he had a TV show at one time, a radio show, Talk America. And he mentioned back then, he's always been a Democrat. The thing is, he said at that time – he was against Republicans. He said the Republicans were 95% corrupt. But then he also said the Democrats were 75% corrupt. He's not exactly he's a Democrat, but I don't think he's a person who's going to lean always towards the Democratic proposals just because he's a Democrat.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. See, that's what Trump did. He started he leaned always to the Republicans, you know, and I didn't like that, I mean, he had a Republican House and a Republican Senate the first 2 years. Why didn't he get that? Why didn't he get everything he wanted pushed through? That makes no sense.
Because, I'll tell you why. Because you said it. He had a Republican House and a Republican Senate. They hated him. The Democrats hated him more, but the Republicans, don't forget how they opposed him. In particular, what's that guy's name? Lindsey Graham. In particular. Yeah. He, Paul Ryan, when he was, the House Speaker, I think, they did not like him for the first 2 years until they found out that Trump was loved by the people. And then when it came time for the 2022 midterms, they needed Trump. So then they were Trump supporters. But prior to that, the Republicans and the Democrats They knew that Trump knew where the bodies were buried and where the skeletons were being hidden, and they didn't want it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, Cooper has to, because the term limit, Cooper in our state, Governor Cooper has to resign as governor. So it's an open ticket for governor in my state, but I just don't think I have the backing or the know-how to run a campaign that large, you know?
That's the problem with me, too. I don't have the know-how or the backing to run a campaign like that.
Well, it's 100
counties.
Well,
of course not, because you guys are not Republicans or Democrats. You would probably run as a Republican, but if they find out what your real policies are, what your real values are, you're not going to get any money from the RNC.
No,
yeah, I know.
That would be the death knell for both of us, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, Joe got 1,500 votes. He got, a decent running. Huh?
Yeah. Well, because out of 5,000 voters, I got 1,500 votes. You know, that was what did he get? He got 3,892. I got 1,492, so 1,495, somewhere in that vicinity. And then I had the mail-ins, which was about another 60 or 70. So, I came in second place, but at the same time, was the primary.
You know what? This is the first time I'm hearing that there were only about 5,000 votes. When you mentioned 1,500 votes before, and you say, you ran for Congress in North Carolina, do you know what I and probably other people thought? That when you got the 1,500 votes, you probably only got 2% of the votes. No.
Yeah, no.
5,000 votes? Hell, you got a huge percentage, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, yeah. You know, and you're right. But that wasn't the general election. That was the primary now. So, for Republicans. That means only Republicans can vote, but I got the Republicans' percentage, though, So, I didn't get the independent.
Hey, you got to mention that more often, Joe. I mean, the 5,000. You got to let people know that you got about, half of 5,000, 25. You got a little less than 50%. That makes a hell of a lot of a difference,
Oh, yeah. You're right. I didn't think about it that way, I really didn't.
So you actually did really well.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
And check this out. Not spending a dollar either on my campaign. My committee didn't raise a dollar. I didn't spend a dollar. Not bad, huh?
Yeah.
So those money.
Yeah. That's right. You got to say that in your campaign. You got to let the people know that without spending their money, spending the RNC's money, you didn't have to spend any of your money. It makes you come across as an organized, frugal person. So you got to remember that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you can win next time too.
Oh, I plan on it. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. North Carolina. That's why I don't want to bite off more than I can chew, though. I don't want my head to puff up too much. I think stick with the NC House of Reps, get that seat, do a good job, and then run for governor,
Yeah.
I guess ordinarily that would be a good plan, step by step. But if I'm correct, and I hope I'm not, 2 years from now, you won't be alive, I won't be alive, Bob won't be alive, unless somehow, some way, people come together. Okay, or we have the military behind us, and I'm hoping that we do. Some people say we do, some people say we don't. I don't know how they know one way or the other.
Things I heard on the show the other night was somebody mentioned about local elections, and to me that's where we really need to focus on instead of going like with the national elections like the Republican Party keeps wanting to do and like the Democrat Party needs to do. We need to focus on the local elections and get them taken care of because that's where the future is coming from.
I'm going to have to disagree with that. Sarge is the one that brought it up. The local elections would be the ones that would, of course, get us the easiest elections, of course, other than, going for Senate and House of Representatives in the state. It takes more money. It takes visibility. But supposing, let's say, for example, Joe, you ran for councilman in your state, right, a local election, and you won it. Now, you're still going to be subject to what the mayor wants, and the mayor, we all know, of all these cities, the mayors of all of our cities are subject to what the governors really want. They say they're not, but they are because they need money from the governor. And the governors, what do they need? Money from the federal government.
Yeah.
I don't know how the local being a local person is going to stem the tide of corruption that originates from Washington, D.C. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying that's my opinion, and I'm willing to listen to anybody who can convince me otherwise. But.
Yeah. Well, governor, you know, being a governor, that's enticing because the governor has a lot of control and a lot of sway, you know. But you know, you got to look at it like this. You know, if you got a safe county and you got representation in your county, you know, that can have a good effect, a ripple effect on the rest of your state and municipality and you know, whatnot. And we remember, one person, really, we can't be looking to just one person. We need lots of good people around the country to be elected. And those people unite together, string together, and network together, even after being elected, you know?
Yeah.
Now, that's the thing. What I like about what you were saying, you hadn't mentioned it on the show yet. I don't know if you've been on Bob's show before. The thing is, what you said was, if you got elected, you were going to have a committee of civilians.
Yes.
You were going to make sure that the civilians were going to know what you were doing and what the people in Congress were doing, and you were going to listen to this committee of civilians.
Yes, no. That's the best way of good governing because it's not private, it's transparent, but they're not paid, and they're not elected, they're not selected, and what it is that they, you know, it's nonpartisan, and they tell me what's the needs of or what's the representation needs are my district is, and then I may of course make the final decision, but I listen to what they say, you know, and that's what's important. That's what's so very important. It's kind of like a jury of your peers, you know? That's what you want.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. You have to have people that you trust. I'm always leery about when a person gets a newly elected freshman gets elected. Then they have, I think they probably already have a staff that's left over from the deep state, you know, from 20 years ago. So,
yeah.
So they now walk into office, and now the staff members of who are supposed to be on their side, they're really paid off by the deep state and by the lobbyists, by the Rothschilds, et cetera. A person who gets elected has to have the ability to discern fact from fiction when these people, the staff members who have been there for years, are telling them what they, you know, what they say the constituents want, how to get along with the people in Congress.
Yeah,
a freshman has to have that ability.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree.
And not many.
I agree 100%. I agree wholeheartedly with you on that. And it's just there's so much change and so much fighting. You know, anyone that's elected to office right now, they should be up all hours of the night trying to fix this country, or trying to work for the people.
Absolutely.
I mean, there should be no vacations right now. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Because they have to know that we only have a couple of years left. I mean, unless they really have their heads up their ass or in the ground. Right?
A lot of them probably do.
Yeah.
They probably do.
Yeah, very, very far up their ass.
God.
I don't know. It doesn't look good. Let's put it that way. You know, it just doesn't look good. And, you know, 20 years ago, this is not something that I would really be really – I thought about it. I knew about it 20 years ago, the Patriot community. But it's not something that was controlling my everyday thoughts like it is today.
Of course
yeah.
not. Why would it? COVID wasn't around at that time. We thought we had time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, I think it all depends on the state you live in, too, because, like, here in New Mexico, I think 48 of the states had already opened up before we did. Our governor kept us locked down, kept us masked up, and there were some of us, who, like me, I never wore a mask, I never got vaccinated, but I did have COVID. And they were trying to tell us that if you've had COVID, then you need to have the vaccine, because if you don't get the vaccine, you're going to catch it. Well, I already had it. And she finally decided that she didn't want to be the last state to open up, so she opened up. And
well, here's the thing about COVID. At the very beginning, they were going back and forth about how dangerous it was, and then eventually they settled down, saying if you got COVID, I mean, from the alt-right was saying if you got COVID, it wasn't really any big deal, because the big deal was in the vaccines. But then they found out that there's such a thing as long COVID, in which the COVID, even though you may not have displayed any symptoms at the beginning, a year from the time that you contracted COVID, you may be developing some spike proteins in your body. I would advise you, Bob, to go to a doctor who's in favor, not in favor of the vaccines, but in favor of hydroxychloroquine and I think ivermectin, and to make just to make sure, get yourself checked out.
I did, and the doctor I went to was actually got to be a specialist in what COVID and everything, and he did say that if I start feeling funny in certain ways, to go ahead and get some ivermectin. He told me where to get it, so I've got that kind of stuck in the back of my mind. I can get it from a couple of blocks away from here, so that's no real problem for me. So
maybe you should get it then, hydroxychloroquine, now before the state comes down and clamps on it, and make sure that those treatments are considered part of the info, part of the anti-American propaganda, and you know that, hey, if they take it out of the stores before you need it, then where are you going to get it?
Yeah.
Not to change the subject here, but, you know, this is one of the problems that we face here in government, is too much government regulation and control. Now, for this, my situation, what I'm going through right now real quick, is I'm third shift. That was over the past year I've been a security officer, okay? And I went to the school, did passed all the classes, did all that, and submitted all my paperwork to the state, and I got hired by a company. And I was working for this company. This company hired me and then shipped me out to a site to work. And I was working at a trucking company doing patrol. I helped stop a robbery that was in progress in August of last year. And I also got employees a month out of 4,000 employees in October. Well, the state all of a sudden decides right after Christmas in January, they notify my company that they're not going to issue me a registration card to be certified as a security officer any longer. They decided that my moral character and turpitude doesn't fit the profile because of a misdemeanor I had, a misdemeanor, mind you, from 3.5 years ago. I think it's more like I ran for public office and I'm a Republican because the board that makes the decision. The board that makes the decision is appointed by a Democrat governor. So I go to a hearing and I tell them, I said, by statute, you guys can't do this. I said, I don't have any convictions on my record that bars me from getting a license. I said, and, you know, so what are you talking about? And they just wouldn't let me speak during the hearing. And they said, oh, we're not going to deny you. You can't be this and that. And we're not going to issue it. And that's the final decision. Boom. And I'm all done. So I file an injunction TRO, and I file it for judicial review at my superior court. Now, I got a hearing on June 12th for it against the board, but this is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. It's been out of work since January. You know, I mean, I picked up other jobs as a security officer, you know, under the table, you know, you know, which is my right to do anyway. But this is dead wrong. This is dead wrong. The audacity of these sons of bitches to tell me I can't make a living. You know,
yeah.
What's going on?
And they're doing that to a lot of people now. We're coming up on the top of the hour. I have to do a break, and I think Sarge is on the phone too. So we'll be right back after a couple of messages, and I'll be right back in just a few minutes.
All right.
Conservative Nation Media is growing again. And now we have a new show that will be airing on Wednesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. It's 10 minutes to midnight. Our new show's host is Joe from Montana, and he's coming to get you. Joe and his co-host will keep you informed and ask for your input, too. This is the only talk show that's not just about talk. It's about real solutions against real corruption in fake D.C. Don't feel as if you have a voice? Well, you've got one now. So don't waste it. Call in and offer real solutions. You want just talk? No problem. Go someplace else. You want to try to find real solutions? Then park your butt over here and call in. God helps those who help themselves. Well, fellow earthlings, wake up, take a hint, get on the stick, and let's start helping ourselves. The longer we wait, the worse it's going to be. We are approaching the virtual end of America. Politicians of both parties are not the answer. They're the problem. Join us for our new show and call in. give your ideas on a solution from the corruption we are seeing in America. The show is It's 10 Minutes to Midnight, and we have a winner here on CNM, where America always wins. By Color Only Day here on CNM with our very own Vincent Brown out of Durham, North Carolina. Black by Color Only is one of the most informative shows on CNM, giving us the reasons that the apostles of blackness are leading this nation in the wrong direction, along with the left. And Vincent will come down on the right too when they do not do what is right. Listen to the wisdom of Vincent Brown on Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will find out that the media is lying to us too, along with the leftists in our government. Some of the right are too, and in Hollywood also. He will make you use your mind and think a bit before making a rash judgment. That is Black by Color Only, only on CNM at 5 p.m. Eastern on Saturdays, where America always wins.
Angry blowback for the downing of Ukrainian passenger jet gathering momentum in Tehran.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Back to Hour 2 of the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show with your host, Robert Garding. This is Kathy Henner's A Daily Roll Call, and we need more voices like Robert who aren't afraid of the wrath of the left, even when the truth is told and it doesn't fit their agenda. Now, with Biden in charge, this is more imperative than ever. From New Mexico in CNM's Freedom Studio comes the second hour of the show, and now, here again is Robert.
Okay, we are back. I'm putting everybody back on the phone again. I think I've got Sarge on there, but he hasn't put up his hand yet, so I'm not going to add him in there. But we are back. You guys there?
I'm here.
Okay.
That's a good thing.
Okay.
Oh, you know what? That was a pretty good promo for 10 minutes to midnight. I think I might go to that show.
Yeah, that was I actually kind of enjoyed listening to it. Usually, like when I did my first show, There was absolutely nobody there. There were people who listened to it afterwards, but there was absolutely nobody there. And so I was listening to it, and I got in just before, right after the show ended, so the chat room was still there. There was a lot of people in there, so I thought, well, this is really cool. It was a success.
I was surprised they showed up so early. I didn't think that I was going to get very many callers either. But then again, these are fellow talk show hosts that I've gone to for a while, so they did me the courtesy of showing up. I hope that is Sarge on the line. Get in here, Sarge, if that's you.
My first podcast, my first few shows actually was all family. I had family from around the country call in, and we did family night. That's what we called it, family show, family night, and talked about family issues, and it just spun off after that from there, you know, to all these other topics.
You can't expect a real listenership the first couple of shows. The word has to spread that you're around.
Yeah.
Well, I think my last show was the first time I did that ad for the show, and it actually turned out better than it was like 40 minutes before the show when I finally started to put that thing together, and I thought, well, as much as I'm rushing to put this thing together, it's not going to sound good, but it actually turned out pretty good.
I liked it, you know.
I think your intros are always very important, you know?
Yeah.
I don't use intros. The reason why I don't is because from my own experience, if I go to a show and I like it, I go there at the time it starts or maybe a couple of minutes later. But then a lot of people will play their intros for 10 freaking minutes. By the time somebody's waiting for the show, they don't want to wait 10 minutes. So I don't play intros.
Yeah, I've learned my lesson on that. I keep it down under 5 minutes usually now, my intro. Unless I'm just going to do like a documentary show. I do some of those now where I just play stuff, you know, infomercials.
I know mine's right at 2:45, so 2 minutes and 45 seconds. And to me, that's a little bit long, but
I'm on Spotify. I'm on Amazon and places like that. And they have their own. They got commercials on there, so you know, regular commercials, not mine. So I don't know how that works, but you know, they'll play a couple.
Yeah, I'd like to find out about that myself.
So I don't know what's going on with that. I mean, I'm on everything: iHeartRadio, Apple, iTunes, Stitcher, Podchaser, everything. And I don't even know how I got to some of those, you know.
I know I came to Blog Talk Radio back in 2007, I think, was when I did my first show. And in 2014, Conservative Nation Media got a hold of me and told me they wanted to add me to their things. And then in 2016, the guy who started it said, nope, I'm through. I don't want to do this anymore. And I told him, I said, well, I'll help you. All you need, you know, I'll pay the amount you have to pay every month if you just want to get it going. He says, nope, I don't want it. It's yours if you want it. So I took it.
At times I've had
three and four shows at one time. But back in like 2015 and 14, we had a show every night of the week. And there was a couple of nights we had two shows.
I don't pay a fee anymore. I don't pay my monthly fee anymore. I haven't paid for like 3 or 4 years now. You know, so I don't know why. I mean, I used to pay $39.95 a month. I remember.
I've had a deal with them. I'm only paying something like $27,
But I'm just saying, as soon as I farmed out to a couple of those other places like CloudFront and iTunes, that's it. I think that's probably what my commercials pay for, you know?
Yeah.
So who knows? Or they're making royalties off my show, and I'm not getting nothing. And then they say, well, we'll just give him for free. Maybe he'll shut up, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, I know there's actually there's just one ad that I've got that I actually got from an organization, and it's an organization here in New Mexico for warriors serving warriors, and they do things like trying to, you know, people who fought in a war, they and are homeless, they try to find them a place to live, and they're here in New Mexico.
Oh,
so that's a great organization, and they actually told me they wanted to have an ad on my show, so I do it. And it,
really?
And it's, yeah.
That right.
And I actually have the ad right here. I haven't played it yet, but I can play it for you guys. It's pretty neat.
Yeah,
yeah. Here it is.
Many of our veterans deal with significant personal issues on a daily basis. These can include any combination of combat-related, medical, or psychological issues, as well as stress from transitioning out of a highly structured environment. It is our hope that through our familiarity with these struggles, we can use our experiences and connections to help these vets move forward in a positive direction and enjoy a fulfilled life. Our vision is to put an end to homelessness and suicide that seems to be prevalent among our veterans. Our mission is to remember, honor, and serve our veterans and their families. Who we are is Warriors Serving Warriors, and we are comprised of veterans of our U.S. military with a variety of backgrounds and professions. Although we are a veterans group of Legacy Church here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, we accept vets from other churches and denominations. What we do is actively seek veterans who would like to be a part of our elite Christian group and share our desires to help and equip other veterans who are in need of assistance. We help other veterans who are in need of assistance with their transition to civilian life or have spiritual, physical, or emotional needs. We are currently proudly serving veterans in the Albuquerque metro area with future plans of expanding throughout the whole state of New Mexico. We meet every month to execute and strategically plan to reach our veteran community with the slogan, No Man Left Behind, giving them direction and or referring them to someone that could help them better their lives. If you know someone or are a vet yourselves, give us a call at 505-302-1999 or go to warriorservingwarriors.org. You can also email us at wswnmvets@gmail.com. That's Warriors Serving Warriors. Give us a call or join today.
And that was it.
A little bit long. A little bit long.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit long.
It is. It's like, where is it? It's 2 minutes and 13 seconds. I tried to compress it down, but that was...
Yeah, I cut it back. But I'll tell you one thing, though. You know, these, because especially liberals, with these liberals, see, they have this agenda that they when they don't get their way or they can't make talking points that have factual background, they automatically, like this is what's happened on Wednesday night, is they automatically start arguing with you, talking over you, and name calling. Name calling and reverting back to phony history or something. They're famous for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when the name calling started, that's when I stepped in and said no more. you know, but otherwise I was going to let Sarge defend himself. Because if I stopped him and he didn't have a chance to defend himself, it automatically made that guy Warren the winner. And I don't think that would have been fair to Sarge. But that's not going to happen again. Like I said, that show's going to be a sanctuary for whoever gets in there. Because
I think Sarge is there, but he hasn't put his little hand up yet, so I'm not sure if he wants to be in here yet or not. So
that wouldn't be, that's not Sarge, because I'm sure you're looking at a 1111 number, and if that was Sarge, he would have been here by now. So it's
that's what I was thinking
right now. But all callers are welcome, right? You welcome all callers, right? I mean, you don't censor callers, correct?
No.
Oh, okay.
I try not to.
Okay. No, I'm saying that you welcome, because you welcome all voices on the show. That's why some podcast shows, they won't let these conservatives come on. They won't let us come on, you know,
that's
especially
right.
Liberal talk shows, you know.
Well, I've been trying not to let somebody in, because if they don't put that little hand up or push a one to come in, then I usually won't answer it, because they might, a lot of times I've answered it and they just wanted to listen. So
Besides, from what I understand, that's a policy of Blog Talk Radio for about the past 4 to 6 years. That wasn't their policy before. So when people used to call in, then the host would automatically let them in. But I guess maybe people complained. You know what Blog Talk Radio really needs? When people call into a show, there needs to be a little buzzer to let the host know that the call is there.
Yeah.
Because there are so many idiotic hosts who will let you wait for 15 minutes before they take a look at the switchboard.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right. They don't see the switchboard. They don't do well. Now sometimes hosts are doing other things. That's why, you know. They, and like for instance, sometimes I'll be on another, like I'll have multiple screens up, and then my screen will be minimized, so I don't see the callers. You know.
Yeah.
Because knowing my luck, as soon as I turn away, somebody calls in and puts their hand up.
Well, there's a lot of things like the. I print out a couple of the stories I'm going to talk about, and then there's other ones that come in while I'm doing the show, so I'll just open up a window there, and it covers up my window for my studio, and I don't see it while I'm reading, and if they want to talk or somebody comes in and wants to talk, I don't see it until I come back to my window that has my studio on it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you shouldn't have more than three windows up. You should have two. But even if you have three, you can adjust them so that you can look at whatever you want to look at. You can look at the studio, the chat, and the callers. If you adjust the, especially if you have a large screen at home, a large monitor.
Oh, that's what I wish I had. I got a 13-inch, and that's it. So I've got a. I put them so that I can see them side by side, and they're so little I can't see them, and it doesn't help me any.
But still, even so, there are people, I don't know if they're minimizing their screens or not, but it's a habit of theirs. You wait and wait and wait, and oh, we've got a caller. We'll be with you in a minute, call.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I've been waiting for a minute anyway.
And then they give you 2 minutes to speak, and if you disagree with them, then it's, thanks for calling, Joe. And then
using Blog Talk Radio.
I never really noticed that hand until I think Joseph told me about it, or Joe, one of you guys told me about it, and I've been, well, I was wondering what that thing was, and I started going back into Blog Talk Radio to see what the thing, and I saw it, and I thought, well, that just means they want to talk. Okay, fine. I didn't know that, and I've been doing Blog Talk Radio since 2007, and back then it was just if somebody called in, it's just like you said, somebody called in, you answered the phone.
But then I've been on BTR since 2008, and they used to have no indication. Then they put up the lighted exclamation point to let you know that a caller pressed one. And now they've got the hand. So I've switched around the technology a little bit. As a matter of fact, when I started, I didn't even recognize the studio when I got in on Wednesday. It was a little bit different than what I was used to back when.
Well, when I first started, they had the audio clips. They didn't have a volume control on there, and I suggested that to them, and I don't know whether they used my suggestion or if somebody else made the suggestion to it. I told them, you guys need a volume control on that.
But, Joe, how about this guy, though, the other night on your show, this guy, he's Colin Sarge, a supporter of the Klan, and just completely asinine comment that he was making. Asinine, you know.
Go ahead, Joe.
It was just he had no foundation to anything he was saying. If he had some factual foundation or some facts to back it up, then I could respect what he was saying. But other than that, he had no facts. It was just all his opinion.
I know it is, and that's the bad thing about it, because whenever it happens on the conservative side as well. A lot of people do not know how to do research. They don't know how to analyze, and they don't know how to express their opinions in a way that is convincing. In order to make it convincing, you have to have evidence. You have to have the statistics.
Yeah.
They don't have it. It's all about their feelings. It's all about their anecdotal evidence, which may or may not be correct on a personal basis. But on a systemic basis, hey, you need more than just what you've gone through. You've got to have the actual real clinical research done by competent researchers to find out what the real answers are. But just to go by your feelings, then everybody has, and I mentioned this on the show Wednesday, confirmation bias and cognitive dissonance. Everybody's ruled by their confirmation bias. Everybody has a particular belief system. And when somebody comes along and has something which is different, which is against it, then they resist. You know, a lot of barroom fights are over confirmation bias. You know, they have one belief about who's the best basketball player, who's the best baseball player. You know, Biden's a good president. No, Trump's a good president. And they don't want to say, you know what, I don't believe everything you say. I don't agree with everything you say. But some things I understand. They don't want to do that. They want to get into fights. And on Block Talk Radio, they want to get into verbal fights. This fucking guy, he comes in following, had to follow Sarge. That was my first show. I'd never been to that guy's show before. So how does he know that Sarge is on my show? He had to have followed him.
Yeah, he was on. He came on my show the night before.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, that was the show he was talking about, my show. That was a racist show.
Oh, is that it? Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know, that's the same thing as, you know, I used to have a blog, right? Well, I've still got it, but I had this liberal that would come in, and the first thing he would always say is, "I hate your freaking guts." I said, "Well, why?" And he'd say, "Because you don't agree with me." I said, "Well, what are your arguments that go against what I – where are the facts?" And he wouldn't ever give them.
I was about to say, you did that. You're lucky the guy didn't take out his shotgun from his trailer park and shoot you.
And shoot you.
You know?
Yeah.
Because when you ask them go ahead.
It's insane what that was my next question I wanted to put up there, not to interrupt you, but it's how do we deal with these people in society? I mean, we're technically at war with them now, you know. Well, I mean, really, we are. I mean, it's because they're trying to ruin our country. I mean, there's no side-by-side with these people.
It's you know why? Because they've been brainwashed. If you ever listen to these, and I'm sure everybody here has, you've listened to the progressives.
Yeah.
They have the same talking points as CNN, MSNBC. Why? They trust those people. Those are the people that they see on their TV. They automatically assume that these people are telling them the truth. I was the same way when I was a Democrat.
Wow.
I just assumed that. They wouldn't lie to me. Why would they lie to me? They're being paid to tell me the truth. And then when I started doing research, then I started realizing. You know, it's like I have this joke about what turned me around was Randy Rhodes. She was on the radio. So she would always say at the end of a broadcast, "Don't believe me. Do your own research. Do your own research." So when I did my own research, I discovered that she was right, that I shouldn't believe her.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think I've said the same thing on this show before, and on my update this week, I talked about the same darn thing. If you don't believe in something that somebody's saying, research it. Find out what's going on. They may be wrong. They may be right, but you'll find out.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what always gets me, and I have to give Joe some kudos here because we were on a show, and I always refer to Joe and I as having done the grilling. When I ask somebody a question, if they don't know how to express themselves or if they realize that I've got them painted into a corner, that's when the insults come out. And that's when you know that they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
That's when you know they're stupid when they start insulting you. So I know I've won. When an insult's coming my way just for asking a question, I've won the argument.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you take it as a badge of honor.
Just about. You know, I'm just waiting for the insult there, trailer trash. Go ahead.
That's why I never insulted you that night either.
You didn't have to. I wasn't that bad. Besides which,
no,
that's
Yeah, I actually felt really bad that I missed your show, because I've been thinking all day long, okay, that tonight's the night. I've got to be in there at 7 o'clock, which I'm mountain time. So I had to be in there at 7 o'clock, and about 9 o'clock I walked in here thinking, I just missed that darn thing. And I felt really bad about it, because, you know, being as I was, you know, I brought you in and we had talked about it. I wanted to be there. And then I just wasn't. And it was like, wow.
I don't think he's made anybody's show on Blog Talk. he said he's coming on mine, too. He's never been there.
Yeah. And every time I see your show and I get ready to go in, you just ended. And so, I've been watching it.
You know what? That's not entirely your fault, because Joe has a habit of changing his times around.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That is true.
And your days.
Yeah. That's why I've been sticking. I took your advice, though, Joe. I've been sticking to Tuesdays, but I do other shows on other days. I mix those days up, but Tuesdays is my main primetime night, you know?
Is it still 6:30 p.m.?
No, 7 p.m. It's always 7 p.m.
7 p.m., okay.
Yep.
So that's 5 p.m. my time.
One, you know, I'll do one on a Saturday sometimes on a Sunday. Like, I did 3 last week because of the news, all the news that was out, you know, with the border.
Well, that's
what I noticed, is that after my show, I went away and came back after a while, and I saw that you had your show. And I thought, well, I missed it again, darn it.
He said, you know, he's got 3 shows. Joe, if you've got 3 shows, you can mix the other shows around as much as you want, but you got to have one show that everybody knows will be there for them. Because
exactly.
Sometimes I want to come to your show, and then all of a sudden it's not there.
Yeah.
Now I know if you're going to be there, it doesn't matter if you change the Saturday to a Wednesday or a Wednesday to a Thursday, but as long as you've got the Tuesday show as your staple show and everybody knows it,
yep.
Then...
I've taken your advice on that, yep. Yeah, that's what it's going to be. That's my staple show. That's a good name for it. That's my staple show, yep.
That's right, your flagship and your staple show. The other shows are good because you've got 2 other additional outlets to let people know what's going on. I think we have enough Paul Revere. That's why I started my show, to try to get down to the nitty-gritty. And I'm going to continue that format. But then I don't think too many people are going to show up for it, and that's what I'm going to switch over to. Does God exist and relationships? Now, those 2 topics are going to be especially interesting because everybody's going to have an opinion on that.
Oh, absolutely.
Talking to men and women, relationship issue, yeah, we can get some feuding going on there. As long as you got women.
Oh,
more,
yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. There will be people talking about these bitches, and the girls will talk about those bastards. Oh, yeah. I will admit that my show probably on Wednesday was interesting, but it's not the type of show that's going to be continued. People are not going to hear that anymore. So
it was interesting. Yes, it was. I will say that it was interesting. It was heated. It got heated. But once you
heated.
You know,
hey, Bob, you remember when I sent you the email that I said, I am going to bring in my lighthearted controversy?
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't so lighthearted, but well.
I thought it was actually good because there was a lot of people. You had people actually in there mixing it up, and that, you know, and I've done so darn many shows where I have absolutely nobody here. Everything that was said during my show was said by me. You know, I even did a three-hour show about a year ago where nobody showed up. It was everybody who heard it after the fact.
Yeah, the downloads they heard about.
3 hours
I know.
I did this whole show, and I'm the only one who talked.
Isn't that depressing?
But you know what? I can't say a different type, but because of my personality, I never had that problem. I've had people follow me like they followed Sarge because I pinned them up against the wall and they didn't like it. They would follow me to a show and start trouble. So you would always have some, you would always have a controversy, but you weren't getting the kind of information that I wanted to impart to the people. So you were being entertained, but you weren't being informed. And I don't want that. Not with this kind of show.
I know. I get that a lot, Joe. I'll get attacked by trolls that are
I like their trolls. Sometimes I like his trolls. I remember one troll came on, had on an Echo, and as soon as you unmuted, it was whoa, 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 whoa. I had to laugh at that one. They were imaginative.
Sometimes they can get real imaginative, even though they have no facts on their side.
Oh yeah, but I've dealt with them over the years. I have another way of dealing with them. They can call into my show anytime because they won't know what's going to hit them. I've got a surprise for them. Me and Lori talked about it. And I won't reveal it because they may be listening right now. But if they call into the show next time, I'm going to use, well, let's say a different tact. And they won't know what it is until they're there. And it will be funny.
Yeah.
Then when I will let you guys know what I've done, and you guys can use it. I just don't want to tell you what it is now.
Yeah, like I was saying, you know, like Vincent on his show on Saturday, he's got his fruit bat stuff, and he's got one. I've got them right here. He's got his shooting of fruit bats, which is this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he's got the one for just the regular fruit bats.
Oh, excuse me.
He's got the fruit bats going. And then he's got the fruit bat alarm, or the alert, and that's this one.
There you go.
Yeah, I've heard that one. I've heard that one before.
And I get a kick out of that when he uses those, because he just means he's about ready to kick somebody off the phone.
Hey, you know what? Let me see. My show's went. Joe, you're going to have a show on Tuesday. Bob, you're going to have a show tomorrow. If you put me into the green room with you guys, I'll tell you what I'll do, and you can do it too, but I don't want to inform the future fruit bats. So when you have time, put us in the green room. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. It's nothing major, but it's something nobody else has done, and you might want to copy it just in case.
Yeah.
So when you have time.
That sounds like fun. I know, if you can get that and drop it into the chat room sometime, or not the chat room, but into the audio clips thing, and just leave it there.
No, it doesn't. It's not about the audio clips. It's like I say, it's something different, and yeah, I don't want to inform the future fruit bats. So if you put, I'll tell you what. You may be in contact with Joe before I'm in contact with you. Before the show's over, I'll tell you what. If it goes into overtime, it's the archive hour, and nobody can listen to the archive hour, I'll tell you guys what I'm going to do.
Okay.
It's nothing major. It's just something different, and it might be fun.
I actually think that doing these shows is rather fun because of the you know, especially if you get a fruit bat that comes in and wants to try and talk you down when they have no facts. That can be interesting and fun too. But
John Doe, he comes and goes once in a while, huh? He's one of my callers too. You know.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Listen, don't take them seriously. Have fun with them. I make them. I tell them, you know, look, I'm sorry that your mother doesn't want to fuck you anymore. So why are you over here? Go back, you know, to your trailer trash, and you know, you'll be happier there. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I know. During the elections that we had here in Albuquerque not too long ago, we had our Supreme Court here in New Mexico are all Democrats, every one of them. There's five of them. And we had three Republicans running for them, and all three got just totally lambasted. But I did an advertisement for one of them, who only got like 1,500 votes out of 10,000 or something like that, which was really kind of sad because he would have been a great a great Supreme Court justice, but every one of them are in the pocket of our governor, who I call the Wicked Witch of the North.
What's
I'm talking about too.
What is up with New Mexico? It's like a state that just doesn't exist.
It's
a sanctuary for illegals is what it's becoming.
Essentially, yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Although, a couple of weeks ago, we had a big kerfuffle here in New Mexico because you got your southern border state counties down there have decided that they are sanctuary cities for to stop abortion and stop illegal immigration. There's one here just right on the other side of the mountain here that decided Edgewood, right on the other side of the mountain east of Albuquerque here, and they decided they were going to be one too. And oh, the Democrats just went absolutely apeshit crazy over that because they're not down in the south part of New Mexico. They're up here in the liberal part. And they just didn't know how to handle that.
Well, I mean, you never hear somebody say, hey, let's go on vacation to New Mexico. You know, you always hear California, Arizona, Texas, you know. So you always hear about those states, but never New Mexico, you know. It's a big
spoiler. There's a lot of neat stuff here, but people just don't want to come here because we're a liberal bastion just as bad as California and New York. And
isn't it horrible what they did to California? That was one of the best states in the union. People wanted to go there to achieve their dreams, to see nature, to see Hollywood. Look what's happened to that.
It really makes me sad. I used to live in Grass Valley up above Sacramento. I loved it there. It was really a neat state, but I wouldn't live there anymore.
I heard the mountains are beautiful up there. The mountains of California are beautiful, I heard.
Oh, they are. They're gorgeous.
The nature, what they've done, and the camping of the homeless, you know, and the shit that's in the streets. They made sure they transformed California into a shithole.
Well, they've done the same thing here in New Mexico. Our mayor has decided that if illegals come into the city, or if you got homeless here in the city, they can park themselves anywhere they want. And in the neighborhood I used to live in 35 years ago, God, you could walk up and down the streets in that neighborhood any time of the day or night and have no problem. If you do that nowadays, you can get killed.
Yeah.
You go down there, and there's an old Safeway store there that's not open anymore, but all along the side of that building are homeless camps all over the place, and it's right on Central. But you go just west of Albuquerque to Rio Rancho, and you don't see that problem because the mayor there doesn't allow it. But here, it's all over the city.
It's making me sick. America used to be the land of the free, at least in theory, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it used to be, and it definitely was a land of opportunity. But the thing is that the illegals, the brainwashed Americans who are natural born under the influence of the gaslighting, and the academics who have sold out, and the Muslims who have felt that this is now their land. Did you read about the story about, and the video, about 2 years ago, where a Muslim professor at one of the colleges, he has a habit, because of his religious background, of putting his shoes outside the door, right? That's their custom. He now insists that anybody who enters his particular office has to take off their shoes.
Okay, so I think the Sarge just put his hand up, or whoever, somebody just put their hand up. I just entered him in. You there?
Yeah, I'm here. Wish I got here earlier, but I had a little automobile mechanical difficulty, and I had put my ingenuity to work to make it here before you ended the show, but I made it.
Yay.
How you doing?
Hey, you know what else doesn't work, Sarge?
Say what?
Freaking voicemail. I called you a couple of times to let you know that what happened on my show on Wednesday is not going to happen again. It's going to be a sanctuary for people like you who are a lightning rod for these assholes who like to follow you around, because I know they used to follow me around years ago. And I let it go because I was giving you an opportunity to defend yourself, so I didn't want to end it too soon. But from now on, somebody shows up and starts trying to attack you or Joe or Sally or myself or anybody else, they're gone immediately.
Oh, well, I wasn't bothered by it. You know that, Joe. I wasn't bothered by that a bit. Not bothered by it. I kind of relish the opportunity to sink my fangs into these people.
Really? Because I don't anymore. I used to, but after two arguments, I had one argument that lasted an hour, one argument that lasted 45 minutes, and it wasn't any fun when I thought about it and reflected on it afterwards. And I said, I'm not engaging in it anymore. So, but
we,
in any case,
but we do note, though, the paucity of their arguments. They really have none. They really don't.
That's what we were
talking
about.
It's like they got a script and they got a pat set of accusations, and when they run out of that, they start name calling. That's it.
Mm-hmm. That I'm not going to permit on my show. And even before that comes up, if I hear somebody showing up and say, "Hey, Sarge," I just might mute them right then and there. If somebody comes up with a voice that says, "Are you Joe? Hey, Joe," and they're talking about Joe Gibson, I might just end it right then and there, because that's going to be another drive-by. Because they didn't have the balls to show up at his show, they're going to show up at my show to attack him. Not happening. So, no, I don't go in for car crashes, all right? There are some shows that do. I'm not about it.
Yeah, well, I think that might be a fairly prudent policy. But what have you guys been talking about tonight?
Oh, all kinds of stuff.
I'm going to assume,
and I almost hate to ask about this because this shouldn't even be a national story. But I'm assuming, looking at the comments in the chat room, sounds like you've been talking about the Citibank Karen, have you?
No, actually, what? That one hasn't even come up yet.
Well, that's just as well. I think that's an absolutely stupid story that should never have gotten national attention. Yet somehow it did. Although we know why it's getting the attention that it does.
Yeah.
There's something I want to talk to you about, Sarge. I tried calling you twice, and all I got was a message. He's not taking calls right now. Is that what you've got? You've got that bad?
No, you shouldn't get that at all. I'll have to check and see why that is.
I checked the number twice.
I don't know why you get that.
I may be dialing the wrong number. Okay.
Well, okay.
I mean, if you don't have it, that's what I've been getting. Okay.
Let me check that. I'll check into that and see, but you definitely shouldn't be getting that.
All right. Another thing,
Sarge, we talked about was Marjorie Taylor Greene filing
the impeachment
against Joe Biden and Mayorkas and Garland, and I think there was several
the impeachment process that Joe had brought up.
Yeah.
One particular solution. Go ahead, Sarge.
Well, thanks to the brilliant strategies of these red state governors who are sending these immigrants off to these blue cities, this is finally getting the attention it deserves. When they start howling about it, even if they are disingenuous, I mean, it's almost impossible for the mainstream media to ignore it anymore.
Yeah, and the funny part about it is they complain about how it's really wrecking their economy because they can't handle it. Well, what about the 10,000 a day that come across the borders down here? It's just, you know, they don't notice that one, but when it hits them, that's when they start getting crazy about it.
Sure.
Yeah, just think of a city with the budget that New York City has, and they're overwhelmed with 67,000 illegal aliens sent to the city. 67,000, and all of a sudden they can't handle it. Now, what do they think Brownsville, Texas can afford, huh? Good Lord, these people are utterly unself-aware.
Yeah, they're not only really oblivious, they really don't give a damn. And as a matter of fact, they want it. They want the illegals here to keep voting for the Democrats. And if some of the Democrats are really more radical and they really want the destruction of America, this is part of their plan to get that done.
Well, wait a minute now. You heard what Debbie Wasserman Schultz said, didn't you? She just said the quiet thing out loud. We need them here to pick our vegetables that'll be rotting in the fields. We need them to do our labor in the hotels and the hospitality industry. We need them for all the little dirty little semi-slave labor work that we can't get Americans to do anymore. Nothing makes Democrats more upset than when you take away their slaves. Nothing.
And they're trying to make
it easy. I was watching that oversight committee thing with Jim Jordan running it, and that Democrat from Texas was trying to push all this stuff, and she got really pissed off because he wouldn't give her the floor.
Man, I'm telling you,
goes around, man, comes around.
Democrats just believe, I swear to God, they believe in slave labor, whether it's in China or whether it's here in the United States. They always got to get some group. They got to set off for slave labor. Now, when Republicans believe in cheap labor, they at least kind of got the sense to kind of keep it toned down a bit. You know, they're not as blatant about it as people like Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and that might be a bad thing. At least we know where they're coming from when people like Debbie Wasserman Schultz just so blatantly stated. They need an underclass. They want an underclass, and they're telling us that.
And while they're doing that,
their whole politics of having that underclass.
Well, yeah, she's oblivious. When she makes that kind of statement, she's oblivious to the effect that it has on natural-born Americans. We can't do this because the vegetables are rotting in the fields and nobody wants those jobs. Get the fuck out of here. You know how many people, white, black, and Chinese Americans, are looking for jobs of the menial style, the blue-collar work?
Oh, I tell you, the young kids who are just getting out of high school or in high school and need a little extra money on the side. That used to be the kind of job that I used to get when I was coming up.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the kind of job that's intended for young people who haven't settled down on a career yet.
That's right. It's a stepping stone.
See, I used to do things like, you know, stuff like that, mowing lawns and stuff like that.
Yes, exactly. I used to do those kind of scut jobs all the time and was happy to get the work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you did a good job at it because you wanted to keep doing it until you could find something else to do.
Exactly.
It was a paycheck. At the age of 17 and 18, you were doing your thing.
Hey, I started working in jobs like that when I was 15 and a half, 16 years old. I didn't stop until I retired from retired. But the thing of it is, it was a leg up for me to have a little measure of independence while I was living with my parents until I went in the Army. And that's really what those jobs are intended for. They're not really intended for a career, for you to support a family on.
No.
They're for young people, basically, who don't have families.
Well, now you got
young
people. Young
kids are told that those jobs are not good enough for them to do. They deserve better at 17 and 18.
Yeah. Really, the implication is that the jobs are that bad. They're saying that the Americans are too stupid and too lazy and too entitled to even want those jobs. That's the connotation of those kind of statements. That's an insult to the natural-born American who says and who has a responsibility within his value system is that I should be out there working, I have a family, and if I can't get what I want, then I have to get what I need. But if they don't let me because
we
of the foreigners.
My idiot congressman, a true moron named Hank Johnson, he's a Democrat. He's the one that said Guam would tip over if you put too many soldiers and your equipment on Guam. It would cause it to tip over, and he was serious. He wasn't joking. Anyway, he says that Americans would starve if we didn't have illegal aliens. And he said it. I know how stupid he is. He actually believes that to be true. He thinks we would literally starve without illegal aliens to pick crops. We wouldn't be able to figure out how to get the crops in ourselves without the illegal aliens. He's serious.
If he is, then he is a moron. I mean, he's delusional.
He's
clinically
imbecilic.
Delusional.
Really is. He's imbecilic.
I was listening to television the other day, and I heard an article about how they have now done a study that Manhattan is sinking into the ocean because of the weight of the skyscrapers.
That was a couple of years ago, I think, wasn't it? Or did you just read it recently?
I just heard it the other day.
Really?
Now, see, here's what these people like that will do. They'll take a kernel of truth and they'll run crazy with it. Now, when they built the World Trade Center, they had to make a very special matrix in which to sink the piers and the foundations of it because of the nature of the soil it was set on. And they did have to do something very special in order to create a bed for the foundation to rest in. Otherwise, it would sink. But they did it. It was a skyscraper that would sink, not the island of Manhattan. But, you know, they take a kernel of truth and then, you know, make a mountain out of it from a molehill.
Over-exaggerate to make their point. And then, of course, some of them do have the art of sophistry, in which they will make their arguments seem convincing, but without facts. They will use straw man arguments, which are very effective at times, but that's the dumbed down nature of our American citizens. We were talking about that, how the schools have literally permeated the brains of the students and just left them, for all practical purposes, stupid.
Yep. That's for sure.
Not to mention the gaslighting and the propaganda that comes over the air every day. Get rid of your TV, folks.
Yeah, that's one of the things that really surprises me about, like, Albuquerque, because we're such a liberal bastion, but the channels that I get here actually come through the Internet, but I can get Newsmax, I can get One America News, I get all of them, and so I actually get a chance to listen to, if I want to, which is not very often, I can listen to CNN, MSNBC, ABC, NBC, CBS, but I also have One America News, and I also have Newsmax, and I also have Blaze and all of those other ones, which is kind of, you would think wouldn't have a following here in Albuquerque, but apparently they do. Wow, just got quiet.
Yeah,
I put
myself
on mute so as not to disturb anybody, so it took me a while to get back.
Yeah, but, you know, is there any new fronts on this, did Congress hold any whistleblower hearings today? Does anybody know?
I don't really know. I know I watched it the other day, and it was just the things the Democrats were doing in there was just asinine. But I was glad that Jim Jordan was the one in charge of that whole thing, because somebody else might have let it get away from him.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, even if that didn't come through with anything new, Carrie Lakeshore tore it up out there in Arizona. She really revealed everything that went wrong there. Now, nothing may come of it, but she has revealed the corruption in Maricopa County and undoubtedly elsewhere in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I was about to ask about that. If I haven't seen it, I've read the headlines about it, but I haven't seen it yet.
But again, here's the thing. They took a look at the amount of time that the people who were supposed to be doing the signature verification process, the amount of time, and then they took the number of signatures they said they verified. And they just simply did a simple mathematical equation, and they were doing about 2.5 seconds per signature.
Mm-hmm.
2.5 seconds per signature. And she was able to prove that in court. It was cursory at best. They didn't actually do a signature verification. They just picked up the envelopes and put them in one file and put them in another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
They didn't.
We do know
how
to do mathematics. You know, we could take a numerator and a denominator and divide it, and it gives you the average time they spent per signature. And it does not compute if they were actually doing a legitimate job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, math is racist, I know, but not always.
What do you guys think about Fetterman and Feinstein?
Feinstein is horrible. I don't care about Fetterman.
They're birds of a feather, basically. I mean, the Democrats, in order to hold on to power, are so utterly corrupt, they will use human beings until they are, as far as they're concerned, human beings are utterly disposable in their relentless drive to maintain power.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that Feinstein and Fetterman are useful until they're not, and then they're utterly unconcerned about them.
But in the case of they both have disabilities, but in the case of Feinstein, she didn't I read that she didn't realize she was away from the Senate for 2 weeks. That's how bad her mental condition is.
Yeah, and they're talking about how she's got brain swelling and everything else. And she should just step down, but she won't do it. She'll be just like, what the hell was her name? Stayed in so long until she finally died in Congress, in the Senate. I think that's what's going to happen with Feinstein. She'll just stay there until she's dead, and then
it's going to be weekend at Diane's after that,
yeah.
As long as there's a judge to vote for or something like that, it'll be weekend at Diane's.
That's a good movie.
I'm telling you, man, and we are in the most interesting times I've ever seen in my entire life when it comes to politics and culture.
Which reminds me,
I don't mean that as a good thing. I mean that in the Chinese way.
I had asked you a couple of weeks ago, because I was asking people, I think it was on Sally's show, how long do you think America has to survive? Some people were thinking 2 years, because you said two presidential cycles, which was 8 years. Now you brought it down to only 2 years. What changed your mind? What did you see?
Is that for me? Is that question for me?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I don't think I brought it down to close to 2 years. If I did, I made a mistake. I actually think that this presidential cycle may be it, at least as far as the beginning of the end. Because if they cement what they're doing now with another presidential cycle, and particularly if they pick up the legislative body, forget it. It is over. We will be the United States in name only.
Okay, because then you brought it down to one presidential cycle. But on my show, you brought it down to about 2025, I believe. And
that's a bit over-pessimistic, but not hugely, not by very much.
I think it all depends on who wins the next election.
Yeah, if you get another Democrat back in. Now, if they get a Democrat in, like, say, Robert Kennedy, the process will still proceed. It might be slowed a bit because he's not going to be able to ignore the radical wing of his party, and he's liberal enough himself.
Yep.
But it depends. If a Biden gets back in there and the eminence Grise behind his throne stay with him, forget it. I mean, it's over. Some more Susan Rice. And Valerie Jarrett and Victoria Nuland and all these others that are running this fool. Oh, yeah, it's over. It's over.
Yeah.
Along with the rest of the apparatus and the bureaucrat chicks.
Yep. And that's what I was pretty much thinking.
And if we don't get election integrity laws, it might be over quicker than that. I mean, that's got to be number one on the agenda. We've got to be assured that the election is honest. And we're not talking about the entire United States. We're talking about mainly five states.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time from 2020, they've expanded their nefarious activities to include, I believe, the entire nation. Those who weren't approached to be corrupt then, because they did need the swing states at that particular time, they are now preparing for, and probably very well, for the 2024 election. By that time, I think any and all of the governors will be compromised by then.
No, without significant election integrity, there's nothing we can do with regard to a peaceful transfer of power. It cannot be done.
And with the military is on our side, as some people say. No,
I don't even know that's true anymore. I used to think that was true, but I don't think it's true anymore.
No, they're starting to go woke.
I mean, I think it's a toss-up.
I'll tell you one thing, too. With their expulsion of the people who didn't want the vaccine, with the introduction, I think it's starting in New York, about having illegals join the police force. Mm-hmm. Oh, forget about it. God. Then they will be they will literally be the insane who run the asylum. Oh, Jesus. Oh.
Oh, Lord.
And a lot of the insane are already running it, so that's the bad part.
That's true. With Biden, he doesn't know when to take a shit. They wipe my butt. Interesting, Joe.
He's always been like every time they talk about him tripping on the stairs, he was always tripping up. Well, this time he tripped down. Did you see that one?
Not another one.
In another one, he was in he was in Japan or something. Like he was getting ready, he was coming off the airplane, getting ready to shake hands with the Chinese guy or the Japanese guy, and he tripped down the stairs.
So is that how we're going to get Kamala Harris? This guy's going to take a header going down Air Force One. He's going to be in a coma. He's going to be dead. And we're going to get Kamala Harris like that. Is that it?
Kamala Harris. Yeah.
Yeah, we talked about an hour ago.
Okay, well, you go. There you go. It all makes sense now. Just waiting for Biden to trip and fall down, take a header down Air Force One.
She's probably putting these things in there because he's looking down at the stairs and he trips anyway, so she's probably got something that comes up and catches his foot.
Yeah. We better watch. We better not let Kamala Harris get behind Joe Biden with a cat in her hands going down Air Force One stairs.
Yeah. Well, we're into that third hour now where nobody hears us but us guys.
Really? Well,
can we say something subversive now? Can we say something subversive?
Yeah. Absolutely.
All right, I'm just asking.
I can hear you.
Okay. Cool.
Well, I got to go, guys. So I'm going to wish you guys be safe. Enjoy the rest of your night. And I'll see you when I see you. Okay?
Okay, Joe. I'm going to check my message machine and see why it's giving you that message because it really should.
I'll hear you when I hear you.
Yeah. Unless they know your phone number, I can tell you what my... the number that I thought you gave me, and you can see if I have the right number or not, if they have your number. If they don't have your number.
Who? Me?
If you don't have Sarge's number, unless you do have Sarge's
number. I don't have
number.
It. Sarge gave it to me, but I threw it away by accident when I was doing my office the other day.
Hey, okay. Well, I'll tell you what, Joe. I'll send it to you again on a private message.
Okay.
And,
you
got
my number? You don't have my number, though.
I
can give you my number.
Montana.
Yeah, I should have Joe's number in my index. See, I don't give it out. You know, I keep it, stats in a private place.
Yeah.
You know, so
I don't want to get trolled.
Well,
I got trolled last
you again,
night.
Since you're on the message, since you're in the chat room, Joe, I'll give it to you on the private chat, and you can send it to Joe Montana.
All right. You got
it,
man.
All right. Thanks, guys. All right.
All
see
right,
you. Guys. See you when I see you. Hear you when I hear you. And be safe.
All right.
Good night.
All right, guys.
God bless you. Okay,
Joe, I'm going to dig in.
Yeah, I see you, Sarge. Hang on. I'm all right. Let me see. I'm writing it down now, and then I'll delete it. Hang on. Because they, just so nobody hacks into there. All right. Hang on. Okay, let me double check it. All right. Okay. All right. We shut it down. I got it, Sarge. All right.
Okay.
Let me look up Joe's, and I'll send it to Joe.
Okay.
If I can find Joe's.
You lost his, too, huh? Okay.
I'm pretty sure I got his. I got his on my phone, I'm pretty sure, so.
Yeah.
But when he called me, he was breaking up so bad that day, I could barely hear him, And I'm like, man, you got to get a better phone. Sarge, I spoke to you about 10 years ago. I had you in my phone from 10 years ago. I didn't even know that. And then I went to look, and then I took it out. I deleted it, right? And then, because you gave me another number, and I was going to update it, and I threw it away.
That's the story of my life, man. People are always discarding me.
Yeah, well, don't feel bad. So what did you think of the talk? What did you think of the show the other night? Boy, oh boy, I tell you, man, I didn't get a chance to talk to you about my show that night. You know, when he said that everybody was Klansmen, he was trying to put you down. I said, Sarge, I know Sarge isn't going to feed into that crap, you know. But he was, you know, he said those guys were all Klansmen. They didn't say they were Klansmen. He said he went to a Klan rally, remember?
You know, it's just amazing. Then he asked me, when did I attend a Klan rally? I told him I never attended one. I knew it just to. So I said, I think I'd take my chance with the Ku Klux Klan than with his bunch, because I know they'd take me out straight for being a race traitor.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's all you have to do, just say something like that. And some of them who don't listen, they just hear the Klan, and that's it. I mean,
boogeyman gets them revved up, man. They got their boogeyman, and, you know, that it turns off their thinking processes.
Exactly. Yeah.
They just hear certain boogeyman words, and they can't think anymore.
Exactly.
Well, I think most of them run around with their brains turned off anyway.
For God's sake, the Ku Klux Klan, and like this idiot Biden, oh, white supremacy is the greatest threat in the United States, and here we are. We got the biggest single cause of death for young black men between the ages of 15 and 35 is other young black men murdering them. And yet he's going to tell them these people who are threatened by these very same self-same black men that their biggest threat is some white supremacist outfit with no more influence anymore in the United States.
Yeah, you're right.
It is nuts. It's crazy.
Yep, well, it sure is.
Sarge, the same thing I asked of these guys. I mean, how many years do you think we really got left to get this thing on track?
I'm serious. I think this election, without election integrity, so we can be sure of the results of the election, I think we will not be able to have a peaceful transfer of power the way elections are supposed to essentially guarantee.
Yeah.
So it's this one. Yep.
I think one of the reasons for that, too, is because...
I believe they're laying groundwork that they will never again lose a national election.
Yeah.
And the main reason for that is because when they found out that they had done all of this stuff that was wrong, nobody was arrested, and they should have been.
Yes. You know, that's
you
a good point.
You weren't even allowed to talk about it on many of the media platforms. Much less anybody be prosecuted for it.
Right.
It was taboo to bring it up as a topic of discussion.
Jeez. Got that right, man. I mean, I just don't know. I don't know. I mean, I just don't see anything good happening to this country, like you said. If we don't get the ship right this time around, this election, I mean, I just don't see. And they've got so many people coming in across the border right now that I don't foresee. You know, anything good coming at all? We lost the numbers game. You know,
mm-hmm.
We're talking millions, and I'm sure however many millions are officially recorded, the unofficial number has got to be far greater.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And they're hiding it from everybody, especially like here in New Mexico. We've got, I think they've got like 53 miles of border. Down there. So New Mexico doesn't have that much, but we're getting, it's like a funnel effect. They're coming right into New Mexico because our governor's saying, come on in, come on in. This place is for you.
Yeah.
And they don't listen to the people starting to say, you know, they don't listen to the people because the people are all starting to say, now, wait a minute here. We can't have this. But the governor's like one of the articles I found today, she's declared war on the south part of New Mexico because they've gone with the federal government and they're going to be building a storage facility down there for spent nuclear rods. And the governor is going to war over that one. She doesn't want it. And it will give New Mexico a whole bunch of new jobs that would help New Mexico, but she doesn't want it because it goes against what she wants. She doesn't care.
Wow.
Wow.
I think the place is called Holtec.
Really?
I don't think anything surprises me anymore.
the thing that really kind of got me on that is they want to build it in Lee County and down in the south down there. Well, Lee County is one of the counties she doesn't like because they're conservative. I would think that she'd say, put them in there. Maybe it'll get rid of them. So she's going to war over it.
My goodness. Oh, my country, my country. What tis of thee?
Yeah, you got that right. Oh, man.
And it just seems to keep getting worse and worse and worse all the time. And, you know, there so many people are hearing actually what is going on, but they're not doing anything about it. And as long as we're not doing anything about it, it's kind of a moot point to say, hey, America is in trouble. We need to start fighting back, but nobody wants to fight back.
Yeah. I don't know.
I hear a dog.
Uh-oh, he's telling me it's time to eat. I'm overdue feeding him, and he's right because I came in late. He's looking at me, and he's saying, look, it's either the food bowl or you go in the food bowl. So guys, go ahead and keep talking. I'm going to go ahead and fix him something to eat because he's definitely a little upset with me right now.
I heard that.
Yeah, you heard him. He said to me, look, getting indignant. Let me straighten him out.
You okay?
Oh, I got the portable phone. I can still talk to him. Go ahead and take care of him.
Oh, boy.
Well, no, but the thing with it is that we have to treat these people as our enemies. We can't be all nice, kind to them. You know what I mean? It's not going to work. It's not going to work.
And that's what I've been saying that for at least 5 years on my show and on my updates that I do on the daytime is that we are at war. We need to start fighting back because if we don't, we're losing freedoms and liberties and laws to protect us daily. And you can only go so far before it just can't be brought back again.
Right. I don't know.
I just can't ever recall a time in American history other than that, like I said, that little dust up in the middle of the 19th century where viewpoints were so diametrically opposed before. I mean, there used to be some overlap in belief about important things, you know, between the major political parties. Today, it's like, in many things, it's almost like night and day difference.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't believe like the Democrats, if you don't believe the way they believe, then you're a traitor and treason racked person who is going against the United States. Insurrectionist, yes. And they talk about like January 6th being the worst insurrection that's ever happened to the United States. Well, it wasn't an insurrection for one thing. They've completely changed the ideas on what an insurrection is.
Yeah.
and they've done it to fit their agenda.
Yeah, their god awful agenda with no redeeming. I mean, have you ever seen an agenda with less redeeming value than theirs? What has Biden accomplished that has contributed an immediate and direct benefit to the American people since he's been in office? Would somebody name one thing? I find it hard to believe that he's that bad. So if there is anything he has done that redounds to the benefit of the American people, I'd like to know what it is. Can you think of anything?
I haven't been able to find anything, but you'll find these people who are just rabid Biden supporters and they say how good things that he's done for this nation. And I was talking to one the other day and I told him, I said, okay, fine, all these good things he's done, name one. And they hung up on me.
Wow.
Yeah, that's it. You know, I mean,
I keep searching my message. It's got to be something. Okay, let's see. The Inflation Reduction Act, big zero. That which was nothing but climate change and everything else, which is, according to them, the benefits will be down the road, years from now. And, of course, we know they're not going to be benefits, but assuming that there were, they're certainly not immediate. And in the meantime, they costed trillions of dollars. So that's out. Mm-hmm. I want to know one thing he has done that helps the American people immediately. He's not giving tax cuts. He's not closing the border. He hasn't resolved any of his diplomatic crises overseas. We're giving away billions of dollars to defend a country that has its borders in peril while we know ours. I'd like to know one thing he has done that has given the American people immediate benefit. Just one thing.
I don't think there is anything.
It's hard, even as much as I despise Biden, it's hard for me to believe there's nothing he's done to the good of the American people. But honestly, God, I cannot think of anything. I'd like someone to call in and tell me what it is. Just objectively, in the objective sense, so I can know what it might be.
Well, you know, a lot of the things that they claim that they are doing good for America is like they're claiming that unemployment is at, I think they say, 3.9% right now. And it's nowhere near that. But what they're going with is they're going with the number of jobs that have come back after COVID, not taking into account the number of jobs that were lost during COVID.
Yeah, were created as a result of the expanding GNP, because the GNP, is not expanding.
No, it's not.
It's contracting. That's why we're headed for a recession. They changed the definition of a recession, which used to be what? Two straight quarters of negative GNP growth? That was the old definition of recession, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think they're trying to change it to four.
Yeah, now that, yeah, to accommodate Biden's miserable presidency.
Yeah. And then
unreal,
then,
man. It's just unreal. We're looking at every day. Just unreal. Just unprecedented. In every aspect.
And then if a Republican wins the White House this next time, all of those things that they're putting in for Biden are going to be suddenly switched around and put back to the way that was beforehand, where they can go after the new president. And they get away with this. And it makes me just scratch my head as to what the heck is going on. Where are the people who are actually thinking here? Because we're allowing it to go to continue. You know, they'll say one thing when they're in power, and then when they're not in power, they'll say just the absolute opposite of that, so they can continue their story. And I just don't understand.
I don't think we ever will.
Nope. I don't think we ever will either. It's sad and actually scary.
As much as I come out here and I shout unity, and I've been doing it forever now, unity, let's work together, all that stuff, it just doesn't seem to take effect. You get a couple good shows here and there, but other than that, I should do shows sometimes on my phone lines. I get caller after caller after caller, and nothing. I mean, lately it's just really been going downhill.
And every time we find somebody who disagrees, with the Democrats, you're automatically on the terror list or something.
Yeah.
Which kind of makes me glad that none of them ever hear this show, because I'd probably be targeted too. But, it's like bringing a boy says when he comes in here, he says, the men in black are coming to your door.
Yeah, I don't know. Let them come. Nothing I can do about it. I mean, you figure it's not. What are you going to do? You're going to stand up for what's right, or are you going to, cower down to, what's wrong? I mean, you have to answer to somebody when you die. It's called God. Mm-hmm. No matter what you make, so it's up to you.
Yeah, that's the way I look at it. One of the things that I've always said is if you're gonna cower to the world, or you're gonna do what the world says, then you're going completely against God, no matter what.
Did you hear about this George Soros-backed U.S. attorney who just resigned because of corruption inquiries and ethical violations and perjury and everything else?
No, I didn't hear nothing about that. What happened?
Her name is Rachel Rollins, and she has just resigned.
Just now?
Yeah, they're still investigating her, but she got confirmed as a U.S. attorney. And I remember a couple of years ago, people were saying how corrupt she was. She was violating the Hatch Act. She was doing electioneering on the government dime. She was creating all kinds of ethical violations. She committed perjury under oath and testimonies, and she was a U.S. attorney. And she was involved in a couple of controversies, involving St. George of fentanyl and, defunding the police and all that other stuff. She called herself a criminal justice reformer, like not prosecuting people for low-level violent crimes. And she was the new Suffolk, Massachusetts district attorney, resisting arrest. She was a real social justice warrior as a prosecutor. She was a real progressive law enforcement officer. And now she's resigned for corruption. Mm. I mean, she... vulgar, vile, she's a nut, she's a race hustler, but she's a typical state U.S. attorney for Joe Biden, exactly the kind of state attorney the Biden administration was looking for.
Wow.
And they keep seeming to come out of the woodworks for him. I don't.
But she's a low-level U.S. attorney, so maybe they'll throw up her as a sacrificial lamb. But, the big boy players and the FBI and all the others, they're still safe from scrutiny right now with Merrick Garland as the attorney general.
Yeah. Yeah, and the...
Did you catch that story about the girl that was coming out of Bellevue Hospital and they tried to take her bicycle?
Oh, yeah, the Citibank Karen. I looked into it thoroughly. It's another Jesse Smollett, Crystal Gayle Magnum, Duke Lacrosse story, hoax.
Well, what do you think about that, huh?
It's typical. Are you surprised? No.
No.
They don't miss an opportunity in a racial, industrial, and racial grievance industry. They do not miss an opportunity to raise a ruckus.
Yep.
This is much ado about nothing. This should not even be a national story.
It shouldn't even be a local story.
Even if everyone... was just misguided. It's a beef between two different parties of no consequence. But no, they have to elevate it into a national story to, A, give us more of this intersectional hierarchy of oppression and oppressor. That's part of the story. Intersectionalism is part of the whole thing. The white Karen, pregnant no less, who... is going to five black young black men, and she's going to try to steal a bike from them. Think about that for a minute. 6 months pregnant.
Yeah.
Then they're up there videoing it and laughing about it. And do you think they'd be laughing at some Karen trying to take their bike if they paid for it?
No, they'd probably be beating her down.
Duh. Look, they were doing this to get one of two things, either to get clicks by making fun of a Karen or getting her to pay for a bike that one of them was going to take and ride away. That's what it was. I'm convinced of it. She's got the receipts. The lawyer's got the receipts. She paid for the bike on her account, her app account on her phone. A minute later, in the struggle for the bike, it was shoved back into the dock. And
yep.
It was reset.
And the media made her the bad guy.
It matches her story. The timeline matches the story. Everything lines up with what she said. And, oh, her tears. Now, just think of the contempt and the derision and the disregard for this woman. Oh, she's faking it with her Karen tears. She's pregnant. I don't know about other people's pregnant wives, but when my wife was pregnant, she would rather frequently burst into tears, get lacrimose, and she wasn't even under stress.
Mm-hmm.
She all of a sudden just get teary. Here's a woman that's been on a shift for like a 48-hour shift at a hospital. She's tired. She's coming off trying to get home. She's got five young men intimidating her over something she's paid for. And are we surprised she would get teary and she's pregnant? This is kind of a common characteristic with pregnant women.
Yeah.
You know, when they're not under stress.
And then on top of that, the media made her the bad guy.
Of course they would. It's all intersectionally, white women rank below transgenders and black men in the intersectional scale. So we have to understand. Now, they all rank above white men because they're at the bottom of the insect scale for everything. But when it comes to the hierarchy, white women are probably just a bit above Asian men. Not by much, but a bit. Because Asian men are considered kind of white privilege because they're so good in their educational attainments. So, I mean, you remember, you gotta know the way the intersectional scale operates so you can figure out how, you know, you're supposed to rank victim and oppressor and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a hierarchy to it. It takes a little bit of getting used to, but you can figure it out eventually. You know, it all started out with the notion that civil rights laws were not intended for white people. That's how it kind of got started. The only people that civil rights laws were intended for was black people. And as a result, this kind of grew into this intersectional thing. Where do you rank on the victim-oppressor scale?
I rank number one.
Adam, you do.
I don't know, guys. I'll tell you what. But anyway, listen, I'm going to step out of here. I don't know if I got to work tomorrow or not. But, you know, Tuesday night, Sarge, I'll be on Tuesday night. I don't know if my host here is going to join me or not. But Tuesday night, I might do a show over the weekend. I don't know, or a late show, you know, one of my documentary shows. If I do a documentary, I was thinking about doing it on somebody like maybe Doc Holliday or something, you know what I mean? Or maybe one of the founding fathers. I don't know. What do you think?
Oh, man, I got to say, I had a great book. A friend sent me a book as a present. And it's called Lost at Sea. Now, you know who Eddie Rickenbacker was, don't you? The World War I ace, racing car driver, guy defied death over and over again. He was awarded the Medal of Honor in World War I for his exploits over the trenches as a fighter ace. Well, I tell you what, this book is Lost at Sea. And he was, as a civilian in a morale-raising tour, I think, he was a passenger in the B-17 Flying Fortress that developed mechanical trouble and had to ditch in the Pacific Ocean. Now, all eight men in the aircraft got out alive, and they got onto rafts. And they spent 28 or 29 days at sea on little teeny-tiny rafts that were in this bomber. As it turned out, 51-year-old Eddie Rickenbacker was the glue that held them together and enabled them to survive. They were giving up hope. These younger men, who I think the oldest one was 28, most of them like 21, 22, 23, they were beginning to give up hope, and he literally bullied them into staying alive with his force of will and personality.
They made a movie about that. Didn't they make a movie about that, or was that the USS Indianapolis?
No, you think about Indianapolis. No, this was just, now it's been referred to in movies, but there's never been a movie about it itself. I think it's worthy of a movie. It's a remarkable story of survival and one man's courage and perseverance who was always a hero. This guy was the real deal hero. He was the real deal. We think of a man. First of all, he had these basic survival skills when he was younger, and he was doing hunting and fishing and all this other stuff. And then he was a race car driver. He defied death as a race car driver. And then as a World War One fighter ace. And as a kid growing up, he got injured. I don't know how many times doing daredevil stuff. So he was a guy who faced death all of his life and was comfortable with it when he had to do it. And when in the survival situation came up, you know, the grit in him came out. It's really an amazing story.
I'm going to have to look that one up. And the First World War, the Air Force, how big of an Air Force did we have?
Well, it wasn't enormous, but it was significant. I believe it was something like 20,000, 30,000 men in the Air Corps. It was called the Air Corps then. The Air Service. No, the United States Air Service. That's what they called it.
Wow.
And, it was remarkable what it grew from. It grew from like five airplanes into a striking force that they were contemplating putting together an aerial army with paratroopers by the end of the war to invade Germany just before they broke through the Hindenburg Line. They had made the air service so big that Billy Mitchell was contemplating putting together an airborne army of paratroops and an airborne army of fighters and bombers that would launch an expedition to try to end the war with an air fleet, an air army.
We had, when the war began in Europe, the United States military had very few airplanes, only six airplanes.
Three, I think, in their air arm.
Yeah.
And they were reconnaissance aircraft.
And
none of them had any armaments on them. They had made an experiment to try to use a Lewis gun in a Wright pusher, and that worked out fairly well. I mean, it had great potential, but they didn't come up with a fighter force until really after they entered the war, and then they had to borrow French Nieuports because no American aircraft manufacturer was manufacturing fighter aircraft. They had to use Allied aircraft.
Yeah, and our soldiers were training
We have six airplanes and 14 trained pilots when the war began.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, one of the early ones was Hap Arnold, who became chief of staff of the Air Force in World War II. And he was one of the early pilots, initial pilots in the air service. But the point of it is there were no manufacturers making airplanes, fighter combat aircraft in the United States almost throughout the whole war. It wasn't until late in the war when one was making Liberty bombers.
Yep.
And but everything else was out. They were using Allied Spads and Nieuports and Sopwith Camels, but they were all made by the Allies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. We had 5,000 by the end of the war, though. 5,000 we just made.
Okay.
And all of our soldiers were actually training here in the United States with sticks
a significant number. Not all of them, but a significant number. Far too many.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they didn't – it was amazing how they did not even have – they had one of the best squad automatic weapons during the war. A light machine gun, in effect, was invented by an American inventor, Isaac Lewis. It was a Lewis gun.
Yeah.
And the American Army took a little Lewis gun because the chief of ordnance had a beef with Isaac Lewis. He rejected the Lewis gun. So the British took a look at it and loved it. They adopted it immediately. It was really an excellent light machine gun. And when the Army went to war, they had to use the French show shot, which was really a piece of junk. I mean, look, considering it was a groundbreaking weapon for its time, okay, it was better than nothing. But, I mean, you consider that they had the Lewis gun, the superb, excellent Lewis gun, and Lewis had to sell it to the Allies, like the Belgians and the British, and the United States had it, and, you know, they couldn't gear up enough to make them in the manufacturing line. They had to equip the troops with this squad automatic weapon, so they just had the French ramp up their production and issue them to American soldiers. It was like that all through the war.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't enter the war, really, until 1917, right?
No, April of 1917, the United States declared war on Germany.
When did the war end?
November of 1918.
Wow.
And the United States didn't really get into the fighting in any serious way until the spring of 1918.
Wow.
And you got to remember, I mean, that was during the spring, the Ludendorff Offensive, when the Germans almost broke through on the Western Front and ended the war. They came within a hair's breadth of doing it. They just cut through the British 5th Army and the French 21st Army, and they almost went through. What killed their offensive was the German troops had been so deprived of supplies and food, they stopped to loot the commissaries when they were making their breakthroughs. I mean, they were making breakthroughs of 10, 20 miles. This was like unheard of on the Western Front. Because they were using these new tactics, stormtroop tactics, they called them. And they were breaking through with these stormtroops using these innovative blitzkrieg tactics that they solidified later on when they had more mechanization. But they would bypass strong points. They had highly trained, physically fit young men who were, you know, really trained to an elite status. And these men would carry a lot of hand grenades and the newly emergent machine pistols, the submachine guns they developed. And just carried sacks full of hand grenades, and they lightened up the Maxim gun as much as they could so they could have squad-level firepower. And their whole job was to just break through. Break through wherever you could. Bypass strong points and break through, and just keep heading for the rear. Try to get to their artillery, get to the supply points and everything. Don't worry about your flanks. Just break through. The follow-up troops will come on, and they'll mop up for you. Your job is to break through. And they wanted aggressive troops who could do it, and they got them when they got the stormtroops. And the stormtroops did exactly that. And they broke through on the Western Front, and they thought they were going to break the whole damn front open. But the German troops were so deprived, they saw all these rich storehouses of Allied equipment, and they stopped to drink, get merry, and get fat. And that kind of halted the momentum of their offensive. And the British and the French were able to bring up reinforcements to blunt their drive. And meantime, they created a big salient, and that's where the American troops got involved in when they got sent in to try to cut down these salients when the Germans renewed their offensive.
Yep.
No, they were. Yeah, but Germany was doing good. If the United States didn't enter, they would, because Russia was all tapped out.
They would have won without the United States coming in. Even though it was late in the war, they might have gone all the way to Paris.
Yeah.
It was a Battle of the Marne where the 2nd Infantry Division stopped the German drive. Ludendorff called it the Black Day of the German Army in August of 1918.
Wow.
And as well know, the bloodiest battle the United States Army has ever fought in any war, including the Civil War and World War II, was the Meuse-Argonne Offensive that started in October of 1918. More American soldiers were killed in that battle than any war in the history of the United States, any battle in the history of the United States. Something like 26,000 men were killed in the Meuse-Argonne Offensive.
Wow.
And if we'd have had the leaders we got now, that would have stopped the whole thing.
Say what?
I don't understand how Hitler could produce more in 1945 than he did during any other time in the war. I don't understand how he could have done that.
Because he had a very brilliant armaments minister named Albert Speer.
Mm-hmm.
Because the American bombing and Allied round-the-clock bombing was having an effect on German munitions production, but Speer figured out how to decentralize it, move a lot of it underground, and use a lot of slave labor to increase their output. He was a very efficient armaments minister. He did a superb job. German fighter production actually increased. Problem for the Germans was they couldn't replace their expertly trained pilots.
Yep. Yeah.
That was a problem. They were relying on a bunch of superb experten, they call them experten. And these guys were like aces, had like 100, 150, 210, 250, 300 aerial victories, shit like that, unbelievable numbers, you know. And they were really expert pilots, but they were being called to fight day after day after day after day, and they didn't make up their numbers they weren't able to make up the numbers with adequately trained pilots who were like duck soup for the Allied fighter pilots.
Mm-hmm.
And they lost air superiority after 1944.
Yeah.
Well, they were also fighting them so darn much they had to drug them to keep them awake.
Man, look. The highest-scored German fighter pilot ace of World War II is a guy named Erich Hartmann. He had 352 kills. You hear what I just said? 352. The second highest one was a guy named Günter Ahl, who had 292. The highest-ranking Russian Allied fighter ace of World War II was a Russian named Kortsub, Ivan Kortsub. He had 62. That was the highest Allied fighter ace of World War II. The highest ranking American fighter ace was Richard Bong with 40. Hell, the chief of the German fighter arm had 109.
Jeez.
He was like the equivalent of a three-star general. He had 109. Adolf Galland.
And you never hear about that one. But.
And they had a guy named, one of the most fascinating stories I've ever read of any fighter pilot ever, other than maybe a guy named Hans Ulrich Rudel, who was a Stuka dive bomber pilot. This guy, his story, talk about one badass motherfucker, this motherfucker. His story reads like something out of some kind of epic drug-filled hallucination. This guy was a fanatical Nazi. But he was one badass motherfucking dive bomber pilot. I mean, he was almost unstoppable. I mean, he sunk a Russian battleship single-handedly. He destroyed about over 500 German tanks. You know, he survived over 550 ground strafing missions, most of them in a goddamn Stuka, which was duck soup. He shot down 19 aircraft, 10 of them with a Stuka.
You think he should have?
And he got shot down a whole bunch. One time he got shot down behind the lines. He got captured by the Russians. He beat the Russians up who captured him. He swam into an icy river with almost no clothes on, swam across the river, and then ran 20 miles to get back to his base.
Let me ask you a question. How you think now? After you think he obviously after the battle.
But wait a minute, that's not all of it. On late in the war in 1945, on a strafing mission, he got caught in Russian ground fire, like so many, because ground attack was really the most dangerous job of the war for anybody, Allied or German, anybody. A ground attack was the most dangerous job you could do. He had his leg blown off. He lost his leg. And as soon as his leg healed up, he went back in the combat and destroyed about another 50 Russian tanks.
Dang.
Yeah.
This dude was legendary, man. And then he went after the war. He got away, and he went to Argentina, and he helped to build the Argentinian Air Force.
Yeah,
an unrepentant Nazi to the end.
Mm-hmm.
But he was one badass. But they had another one that was even crazier than him, a guy named Hans-Joachim Marseille. Now, he was like a beatnik fighter pilot. This guy was unbelievable, too. He scored 150 aerial kills in North Africa flying against Allied fighters in 3 months. 3 months. He became almost like a rock legend in Germany. I mean, he was like an equivalent of a rock star. And he was a beatnik. He was a bohemian. I mean, he liked American jazz, and they didn't like him because he liked jazz. He was an anti-racist because he made a great friendship with a South African prisoner of war who he made his personal Batman. And he was worried about Nazi policies toward him should something happen to him. And they tried to put him in some kind of slave labor camp or something. So he got his mates in the squad who also liked the guy to make sure nothing would happen to him if anything happened to him.
And
Hitler,
no,
you know, as you know,
Nazi
first. Didn't like jazz. He was a classically trained pianist and musician. But he loved
after
jazz.
He loved jazz.
But when he went to Hitler, Hitler awarded him his oak leaves to his Knight's Cross, and he went there to get it personally from Adolf Hitler. He was asked to do a concert pianist, and he was superb. He gave a superb Brahms, Rachmaninoff, Beethoven, all the classics. And then at the end of it, after he'd been warned not to do this, he started breaking out into jazz. And Hitler just sat there and listened to it stone-faced. This guy did not give a fuck.
At the Battle of Kursk, when he was done there, and he sent everybody over to, you know, defend the invasion from the West, do you think he should have done that? Should he just kept fighting because he was winning? He was winning the Battle of Kursk.
He could have won it, but he got nervous because it was so touch and go. And actually, when the Germans broke through at Prokhorovka, which was that great big tank battle in Kursk, Hitler got a little nervous. And then, when they landed in Sicily, he was worried about his western flank, because the western flank, if they really broke through in the west, it was a much shorter distance to get to Germany than the east, where he had a lot more space.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why he took all those, like he transferred, like the SS Corps from Kursk to the Western Front, like the Leibstandarte and Das Reich and all these other SS formations that were fighting at Kursk.
Yeah, I know.
Moved them to the Western Front.
So then they were on full retreat after that, though, because they couldn't stand the defense. They couldn't be moved offensively anymore.
Well, Joe, they were on a strategic defensive after Kursk. Kursk was the last time the Germans mounted any sort of significant strategic offensive action.
Now,
from there on, they were on a strategic defensive.
Now, let me ask you this. If he didn't do the Battle of the Bulge, didn't attack Kursk, and he contracted everybody and may have set up a defensive perimeter, what do you think would have happened? I bet we would have never been able to make
Berlin. Oh, it would have been bloody. I mean, if the Germans had done what was militarily sound and expected, they would have made that fighting into the Siegfried Line and the Rhine River, which is a natural barrier. It would have been bloody. They would have been, I know they would have been stalemated like they were in the Hürtgen Forest, which was the most god-awful battle the United States Army fought in the European theater. And it's worse even than the Battle of Bulge in a lot of ways, because actually it was an actual victory for the Germans. They actually defeated the U.S. Army in the Hürtgen Forest. And the reason they did it, because they were trying to protect their eastern flank as they made their preparation for the Battle of the Bulge. And that's why there was a term hold in Hürtgen. So, if Hitler had done what he was expected to do and he had actually husbanded his resources and had him set up for a strategic fight to bleed the Allies white, then believe me, that the only way they would have beaten the Germans would have been with the atomic bomb, which they would have had ready by July, and they would have dropped the atomic bomb on Germany.
Yeah, I know, right?
In fact, they were developing it to drop it on Germany.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, that's the reason they were developing it, because these scientists and physicists had gotten away from Czechoslovakia, and at the urging of Einstein, when they wrote to Einstein, they said, look, the Germans are doing atomic research, and they might get the bomb. It was Einstein who wrote Roosevelt and said, look, the Allies have got to get working on the bomb because the Germans might get it. And if they were going to get the bomb, they're going to drop it on Germany. Well, Germany surrendered in May of 1945, and the first bomb wasn't ready until July of 1945.
Yeah, but
they would have dropped it on Germany, though, but that's what would have happened. Because with
those
all
scientists.
Those, look, he rebuilt the three armies that he rebuilt at such great labor and cost, the 6th Panzer Army, the 5th Panzer Army, and the 7th Army, which is what he committed to the Bulge. Can you imagine those troops in fixed fortifications on the West Wall in the Siegfried Line in the Rhine River?
Yeah, it would never be.
I mean, they would have made it god awful for the Allies trying to get.
Yeah, and he would have had over 10,000 aircraft. He would have had 10,000 aircraft to patrol the skies, because, you know what I mean? Because he would have wasted them all, you know?
He wasted them in Operation Bodenplatte. I mean, you know. Yeah, they did a lot of damage to the airfields and destroyed a lot of Allied aircraft, but they didn't kill that many Allied pilots. And, you know, the Allies were able to make up the aircraft because the aircraft, U.S. aircraft production was so goddamn high. Within a month or two, they had made up all the aircraft losses.
And they lost the rest of
their very best pilots. They lost the rest of their very best pilots.
As soon as he withdrew from Africa and as soon as he made the blunder of Dunkirk, which he shouldn't have done, he could have taken England, you know, or he could have stopped right then and there and asked for peace.
Well,
but he went into Russia, did Barbarossa, and that's when he really had to commit and he really screwed
Africa
up.
Africa was kind of a sideshow. Africa didn't really figure into this plan until the spring in 1941 when Mussolini started getting his ass kicked. You know, I mean, it was kind of – South Africa was really kind of a sideshow. He only went in to bail out Mussolini. In there. And you know, and Rommel never did get the kind of support that he wanted. If he'd have gotten the support he wanted, he might have made it all the way to the Suez Canal. But he was always fighting a shoestring operation. It was amazing he did what he did because he was so damn daring, and he could use his tanks like ships on the sea in that desert. This guy new maneuver warfare.
Yeah.
And well, that's why he was able to do what he did in the desert. But shit.
Hitler, I just don't know. I just don't understand why he made the decisions he did when you look at it. I just don't get it, you know?
Dunkirk,
I mean,
is
sense.
What lost him the war. That's where he lost the war. Not because he didn't score a victory, because he did, but he failed to destroy the British Expeditionary Force. That's
yeah.
where he screwed up, right there.
Yeah.
But Goering told him the Luftwaffe can finish off, because he was worried about his tanks. His troops were exhausted. His tanks
yeah.
needed maintenance. They've been running at a breakneck pace for 3 weeks. Without breath, practically. They were just busting through everywhere. And they were really worn out and tired. They needed maintenance on their vehicles. The troops needed rest. And he was worried about this. And so Fatso Goering steps up there and says, oh, don't worry, my Führer. I can take care of them on the beaches. We can wipe them out. And that was it, right there. Even though his troops were exhausted, they still could have overrun the British on the beaches.
Yeah. Well, he didn't take care of him on the beach, the fat Goering.
I know that's why he lost the war, because then Britain would have had to settle for peace. And the United States would never have had Britain to launch an invasion of the continent from the west.
Yep.
And he could have been able to turn all of his efforts to the Russian front.
Yep.
He wouldn't have to fight the front war.
What kind of world would we have today, Sarge? We'd have a pretty messed up world.
I guess we would have, man. It's almost impossible. Look. It still is not clear that Germany would have won the war. Don't make me a mistake. But the course of it would have been so different. It's no telling how our history would look today. We would have had a lot more dead Americans. I believe that. You better believe that. A lot more
Americans
would have
stayed out of it.
I think we probably would have had at least a million or more dead if all those German troops weren't tied up in Russia.
I think he would have got
more than a million dead on the Western Front alone.
He would eventually attack the United States. He would have eventually attacked the United States.
He would have had to get his navy first, and he didn't have his surface navy. That's why his commanders would tell him, my friend, you need to wait until we have a surface navy worthy of the name. They had a great submarine fleet, but their surface navy was pretty small.
Well, they had no aircraft carriers. They had no aircraft carriers.
They had no aircraft
carriers. Battleships.
The battleships, they didn't have that many battleships. Cruisers. The surface navy was well-trained, and it was well-equipped, but it was small.
I just don't get why he went into Poland. What the hell was he thinking? I mean, I guess I can see why, because he was lucky all the other times, but man, he should have stopped. Why? You got it all. You have it all.
Because
you got
to remember what his goal. I mean, he wrote it down in Mein Kampf. He told everybody what he wanted to do. He wanted Lebensraum. He was going to get it in the East. He said he was inspired. Like I said, that's why you need to get that book I tell you about, Hitler, A Global Biography. It is the best single book I've ever read on the subject. He said that the American expansion across the North American continent is what gave him the idea to go take Russia.
Really?
He looked at the way the United States expanded from sea to sea, and he said, Germany needs to exist from the eastern border of Prussia to the Ural Mountains in European Russia. That's the boundary he set for Germany.
Hey, what was the name of that book again? Hitler, the Global...
Oh, by Brendan Fitz, Hitler, A Global Biography. And you know what the greatest thing about that book is? Reveals a wealth of information about his love-hate relationship with the United States. I never knew he was so obsessed with the United States, the things he loved about the United States and things he hated about it.
What
and
he
and if you read it, you begin to understand why he formed the worldview that he did, at least with regard to the United States.
Yeah, one of the things he liked about it.
Here's the big thing. The guy thought that the best Germanic blood emigrated to the United States. And he had seen that what he considered the vigorous, racially excellent Germanic stock that had the courage to emigrate and leave Germany and strike out for parts unknown, and he watched the same blood he put come back to fight Germany in the First World War, big, strong, healthy, vibrant, you know, compared to the worn-out, exhausted Allied troops. And here these big, brawny Americans coming over there to, you know, put the nail in the Kaiser's coffin. And that's one thing that impressed him about the United States. All this, what he put it, this is his thoughts, not mine, this Germanic blood that's coming back to fight us.
Yeah.
And he was worried about it again in World War II. But he said, well, the Americans are weakened because they're negrified, and they got all these Jews and all these motley other peoples, and then maybe that'll cancel out a lot of this fine Germanic blood that might come back to defeat us. And but he admired American industrial efficiency. He admired, the pioneering spirit of Americans, its innovativeness, its technological excellence. He loved all that about the United States. He didn't like the United States culture, though. He didn't like the influences of what he thought was the undue influence of the Jews. He didn't like the fact that they had all the influence of black people in it. Now, he didn't like that. But other aspects of the United States, man, he was all into it. You got to read this book. This book is really excellent.
Yeah,
Hitler, A Global Biography. It is the best single book I have ever read about Adolf Hitler. It's got extensive footnotes, and it's really a masterwork. And the most revealing insight in it is his regard for the United States. And dozens of speeches, he made clear his feelings about the United States.
Well, wasn't one of the things he liked about the United States was the way we subjugated the American Indian?
Yeah, I wouldn't say he liked it, but I guess he did admire
it.
Because he liked people who he thought were ruthless. And he definitely made references to that all the time. He said the people of the United States were not going to let any Aboriginal people stand in their way as they sought to expand their empire. And that's the way he looked at Germany, and that's the way he thought he's supposed to run things.
Yep. Well, we're coming up on the top of the hour for the third hour, and it's going to go into an area where I can't do anything at all in my chat room. So
that's time to wrap it up again.
Yeah, so coming up to the end of it, so I'm really glad that you guys were here tonight. This was made a really great show, and I thank you. And hope we can do this again.
I'm sure we will.
No doubt. There's a lot to talk about. Because look, like I said, we are living in the most interesting of times, according to the Chinese, and I don't mean that in a good way.
Yep. Absolutely.
We'll see what else is on Blog Talk tonight, I guess. What's this Ron Neck show, Ron Rex show? What's that about?
I'm not exactly sure.
Oh, I've been on the show a few times, quite a few times, actually. He's a fun guy. He's funny. You know, he likes to take a distaff look at events.
All right. Well, I'll see what's going on. All right. Sorry to take
that's the first time I've ever seen him in my chat room, so that was cool.
Yeah.
So. Thank you guys for calling. God bless you guys. I'll talk to you again soon.
That's the idea.
Okay. Have a good night, Sarge.
Good night. Take care.
Okay. We are at the end of the show, and I'm glad that you guys were here. It was a great show. Had a lot of information, and I will see you guys again next week. God bless America. God bless our troops, and I'll see you again next week. We'll be back next week with the next episode of NWCR Radio, where we work hard to let you know what America has in store and what the Constitution and our laws have to say about it. Stay tuned. God bless you all.
I love it. The stars get in there. We ended up with a pocket knife. Yeah. So I ended up having a 3-hour show. Actually, I looked at more than 3 hours.
What? I didn't move across.